Was that ant that stood up to me?
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh,
one ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Did that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up.
Those puny little ants outnumber us 100 to 1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life.
It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Blast off!
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends.
He's got a laptop.
I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends.
He's got a laptop.
There it is.
He's got a laptop.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch it.
Listening to the Mad Science Show at www.shazoozradio.com and peopleforpeople.ning.com. So if you want to join in on the chat, jump over there to the superchat.html at shazoozradio.com, and you have access to four separate chat rooms. And if you scroll down underneath those chat rooms, you also find a link to People for People Radio Network. So click on that one and go over there and say hi as, with those folks as well. See, the best thing about these computers, you know, Windows and all that, is you can be in all these chat rooms at the same time. So you can see what's going on around. But anyway, so thermal energy, also called heat energy, is produced when a rise of temperature causes atoms, molecules to move faster and collide with each other. The energy that comes from the temperature of the heated substance is called thermal energy. So why am I even bringing that one up? Well, the future of heat, that's the big question right there. You know, the majority of all your electric bill out there, if you're on electric heating, is your heating system. The majority of your electric bill are any resistive loads that you might be using, anything from the old incandescent lamps to different types of heaters, space heaters and such like that. And then you've got second in line would be all your electric motors and you know, any resistive loads at all. So, you know, to supposedly get down to reducing your carbon footprint means you need to be able to use less electricity. And so if you're on a household that is completely electrical, you don't have any natural gas, or you're not burning any coal or wood or anything for supplemental heat, or you don't have any type of solar heater set up. So you have to find some sort of solution in order to be able to reduce your cost of your electric bill and bring that down to, you know, a more manageable, where you can actually save some doggone money and put some money back into your pocket so that you can reinvest that money into, you know, more advancements in your house as far as your energy cost. Well, been trying to talk about plasma forever and a day. When I talk about plasma, I'm not talking about the hoodoo voodoo version of plasma where you gotta love your reactor or you don't get no free electricity. If you're a jerk, you don't get to use it. Well, I don't even tell you where I even got that from, but either way, it doesn't matter. What does matter is plasma is the fourth state of matter, and you know, if you actually look into, you know, the temperature of plasma itself, the source, the core of a plasma ranges in temperatures from 11,000 to 14,500 degrees Fahrenheit, thus limiting its applicable uses. As an ionized gas, plasma electron density is balanced by positive ions and contains a sufficient amount of electrical charge particles to affect its electrical properties and behavior. That sounds pretty, that must have given you a headache listening to all that. So, anyway, you got some different stages of matter, and plasma being the fourth state of matter. The thing about it was, the reason why I read out those temperatures, because the heart of that plasma is like really, really super hot. And there are plasma cutters out there, and there are people working in plasma gasifications, because two of the problems that we've got in this world, two of the major problems, is one, we generate a lot of trash. There's a lot of waste going on out there. And as far as the way that we use our electricity, we're also wasting a lot of energy. The majority of all the electricity that comes to your house gets wasted in the form of heat. The majority of the energy coming down the wires, same exact concept. But because the energy as it's trying to move through those wires is meeting resistance, which is generating heat that is basically radiated out into the air. And so, you know, when you want to intentionally generate heat, you plug this device called a space heater in. And that current that's trying to flow through that wire, anything from nichrome wire or tungsten wire elements inside there, it's these two elements are actually resistive to current flow. So whenever you're forcing that current to go through there, it causes the element to get red hot. But as that's occurring, it's also generating waste heat energy, because you're putting too much power to those elements, which they don't even need near the amount of power that you're putting to the space heater. What's coming out of the wall whether you be on a 50 hertz per cycle system or 60 hertz per cycle, is coming out constantly. It's coming out continuously, and your devices can't use near the amount of power. And so, since heat also will travel basically through the copper wire, you know, you'll get these electricity, being able to go through copper wire, and copper is also a good conductor of heat. So you can see how this effect would actually, you know, at a certain point when the heater got up to its temperature and that it can't accept any more of that energy coming out of the wall, well, that heat's got to go somewhere. Whatever ain't being radiated away from that wire fast enough is going to translate back down into the wire. And so if you really look into how your breaker switches work inside your homes, they're thermally reactive. When those things get hot, they'll say, you know, on the breaker, it'd be like a 15 amp or 20 amp or 30 amp or whatever breaker. Well, that kind of leads you to believe that it's electricity that actually, you know, causes this to happen. But in reality, it's not. It's temperature. It's when those things get hot because you're drawing too much current, when they get to a certain temperature, it will trip that breaker off and shut the power down to whatever device that you're trying to run. And so with that said, now if you got an understanding of how this is actually occurring, you got to ask yourself, why does this breaker keep kicking off? You know, it's not because the device is faulty, unless it's a dead short. Of course, obviously, you know, that would cause that temperature to raise rapidly and then shut the breaker off because you got a dead short. It's getting hot real fast. But anyway, with a long, you know, length of this resistive wire in there, then, whenever you get that wire heated up and it's radiating heat out into your room, that extra energy continues to come in. It doesn't need near the amount. Once you get it up to temperature, you should be able to back off the amount of power input and then not be, running it constantly, trying to shove that power to it. There should be self-regulated when the temperature of the element gets up to a certain degrees, it should automatically kick back on how much power. But that ain't how it works. We just continuously keep shoving power to that coil or whatever. And so eventually something's got to give. Either, you know, your breaker fails and your wires catch on fire or whatever, you know. So electric heat, if you don't understand it, could actually be dangerous, you know. Some of the more efficient ways of doing it is to use an element intermittently to heat up, like an oil or, you know, even water or something like that. And then, you know, that space heater wouldn't use near as much power as the other one that's continuous because it's constantly shutting the power off to it. And then when the temperature drops back down, then it turns the power back on. Your coffee pots have a little thermal sensor in there. If the element gets too hot, it will actually shut the power off. And then, you know, when that temperature drops back down, element will, you know, reset itself automatically, and then the power come back on, and so you can maintain a steady temperature. Otherwise, those coffee pot elements would sit there and continuously add heat to the system and boil it and boil it and boil it and boil it until, you know, something's got to give. Either the element will burn in half or whatever. It'll get red hot. But the thing to take away from all that is that, let me say something else real quick before that. If you go watch my video, Redneck Hot Tub, there's something really interesting about that whole deal. Speaking about coffee pot elements. Normally, if you had a hot tub and you had a 220 element and, you know, a kind of a little miniature boiler system in there, that thing used a lot of power. But by using just the equivalents of I have a coffee pot element, I was able to heat a bathtub full of water. And keep in mind that there's no insulation under the tub. There's no insulation around the tub, and the tub is actually exposed to the open air outside. So it'd take you approximately 4, maybe 6 hours maximum, depending on what temperature was outside, to get this thing up to operating temperature. But once you got it up there, you couldn't leave this element on constantly, because all that water molecules inside there are so energetic that they're, you know, running around and they're helping to maintain that heat. And so after a certain period of time, you have to shut that thing off. Otherwise, it gets too hot to set in. I sat in that doggone hot tub out in the dead of winter. There was ice and snow everywhere. It was cold. I'm in my shorts sitting out there in the middle of the winter time in this hot tub with no walls, no insulation, open to the air, and was warm, snug as a bug in a rug. So it, you know, it was pretty doggone impressive. It, once you got it up to operating temperature, it didn't take nothing to maintain it. The same thing applies with electricity. The same thing applies with the way that heat is distributed and so on down the line. But for the most part, the way that we use all of our electricity is inefficient. We got transformers in just about every device out there that take that either 120 or 220 volts and steps it down, and then, you know, uses a lower voltage, and maybe even takes that lower voltage and, changes it from an AC wave to a DC wave to run whatever gizmo it is we're trying to run. You know, such as the devices in your computer system, you know. It's an AC, and it's got a DC aspect in there as well. So, you know, you're basically having to step this down. In the process of that step down, that resistance produces heat that in turn, you have to have a fan to take away some of that heat. You have to have heat sinks on your processors in order to take away some of that heat. So, unintentionally, we're literally generating heat while trying to do this. Anytime you use any kind of energy whatsoever, you generate heat. It's just the process of doing it. You know, those molecules getting all excited and smashing around into each other. But the thing about it is, it's the way that we go about generating that heat with, like, electric space heaters or even electric boilers or things like that, that is the inefficient problem there. Now, using plasma technology and understanding higher voltages at higher frequencies, you can start to see that if you, like, for example, I took a 12 volt Beckett oil burner igniter, and this thing runs in the milliamp range. You know, it takes 12 volts off of a, you know, DC power supply, and or car battery or whatever, and it ramps that up to 20,000 volts. Well, that 20,000 volts is at a high frequency. Obviously, that high frequency, high voltage is not capable of running an electric appliance at that stage in the game. However, what it is able to do is it doesn't meet the resistance that current would actually meet as how the standard electric system works. And so, with that said, it's able to do things that regular electricity doesn't have, those capabilities. For example, I took an old incandescent headlamp out of a vehicle that the lamp was burned out. The tungsten element inside there was burned out, and it also, I don't believe it was argon, it was halogen light lamp that I used. But anyway, what the deal was, when that 20,000 volts at a higher frequency sent through that bulb, since that element was broke, your standard current wouldn't make the circuit. However, that high voltage, high frequency was able to ionize the gas inside there, being the halogen, and literally leap across that gap of that broken element and light that element up. And that vibration, that the temperature of that plasma that was generated around there was able to do the exact same thing that the normal current would have done, And instead of being resistance that caused that thing to get hot, it was literally the plasma and the high frequency of the voltage that I was shooting inside this bulb. And so it lit up a bulb. This bulb otherwise would not work in the standard you know, circuit. You plug it into your car, the elements broke, it can't make the circuit, so it won't light up. However, using this high voltage, high frequency, it was able to light it up anyway. So, there's something to be said there. Now, the reason why I was using that bulb to begin with was because if you have a vacuum spark gap on your Tesla coil, then that means that you can control the frequency ranges a lot better because you don't have all the atmospheric gases or dust or any interference in that gap. Like an open air spark gap, whenever you're shooting that voltage across there, that high voltage arc across that spark gap, anything such as dust or, you know, you wave your hand, the wind, all that can affect the frequency, and so you can't tune it as good as you could if you have a closed system such as a vacuum spark gap. Matter of fact, that's not even new technology. I've got a doggone vacuum spark gap that came all the way from Russia that they use in some of their applications, but this thing cost about $100. And it's actually gold-plated on the connector portions of it, but it's argon-filled, and it's for a high-voltage, you know, controlling that spark gap inside there so that whenever you're tuning something, you can tune it really good without any kind of outside interference. So it's not even new technology. But if you start to put all these pieces of the puzzle together, and you look at the capabilities of what plasma could actually do, because it's waste heat that we're trying to get rid of. So maybe we're looking at this thing all backwards. Maybe the future of heat is that we get to the point of how all these other things are working. They're all resisting that extra current coming in there. If we want our electrical appliances to run better, we got to figure out ways in order to allow that excess energy to bleed off and go somewhere else. Because they don't need near the amount of power that we're putting to them. We're constantly putting power to them. They don't need that much power. Even your space heater doesn't need near the power that you're pushing to it. You're pushing it constantly, which that heat translates back down through the wire. Whatever energy that heater cannot use, it's trying to send back to the source, the wall outlet, and it's bouncing back and forth in between there, generating heat, and eventually something's going to reach its thermal breakdown and it's going to fail. Now, there's all kinds of heating sources out there. Plasma is the one that I want to try to get about today, but I want to go back and I want to talk about one that some people probably don't even know exists. It's actually a sawdust heater. It's you go to a wood shop or whatever, or even people who actually burn wood and cut it with a chainsaw. There's a lot of different like a wood burning type of deal, but the way that they use these things where they're feeding sawdust down into it, it doesn't have to have any motor. It's like gravity fed, but it not only burns the sawdust initially, but it also has a gasification effect where it's then in turn reburning some of those exhaust fumes, and the temperatures that these things will get up to are pretty incredible. Now, I got a couple videos that I want to play with the soundtrack, and you can listen into what this guy is talking about, a little bit of explanation about it, and hopefully you get a little bit of idea about this sawdust deal. The thing is, we got a lot of trash, we got plastics, we got different materials, even food waste, we got, access. If you go to a wood shop, most generally, they throw that doggone sawdust in the trash, unless there's somebody who comes around and gets it, and they take that sawdust and they mix it with some materials and they press it into fireplace logs, or they even press it into furniture so those materials could actually still be used. But when you're talking about generating heat, you know, wood burning stove or pellet stove, a lot of folks didn't realize that there's actually a doggone you know, sawdust stove out there, and it's not new technology. That's not the reason why I'm bringing it to you. But there's something in this deal that is related to what it is I'm trying to get to, about how I did a bit show about everything is fuel, where it talked about, you know, grass clippings, leaves, and all these different types of things that could be turned into biofuels and gasified and so on down the line. And when people were talking about getting away from, you know, carbon or burning any kind of what they like to call fossil fuels, they're not going to be able to do it unless they figure out that plasma, you know, is something that, you know, you should take a really serious look at, you know. But, you know, we're in the year 2020, and everyone seems to still be dragging their feet. I'm trying to put some things on the table in hopes that people will take these ideas and run with them. We should be so much further advanced than what we are right now. Sometimes in order to move forward, you got to go backwards, and you got to look and see what they were doing back in the old days. Here's a video that I want you to listen into. It's called Sawdust Furnace Gasifier.
Hey everyone, New Hampshire Hobby Logger here. Well, today we're going to talk about the sawdust gasifier that I have in the shop. It's a conifer number 12 sawdust burner, as you can see. I've had a couple of people that were sort of interested in it, sort of, and I figured I'd run a little video on it to show them what it was all about. Most people have never seen anything like this. It burns sawdust. It's, let me back out of this a little. And we make a lot of sawdust here in our firewood operation, so we're not on lacking any fuel at all. Now, what this thing really needs to operate is it doesn't need any power at all. It relies on gravity, and around this part of the country, that tends to work pretty well. And it also has to have a real good draft to keep this thing, the gas going in the right direction. It's a true gasifier, so it's superheating the wood that's the sawdust that's coming down in it, and it drives the gas through the system. And there's a secondary ignition that takes place behind this in that heat exchanger. So I'm going to give you a little quick. I drew out a little kind of schematic here of what this thing is. Let me get in here and I'll explain it to you a little bit before we start to get into it. Have a little more understanding of what's going on with this thing. All right, I'll get my pointer out. Now you'll notice this is about the side view of the riggy there. Here's the door that we were looking at, and there's a little flapper here, which is the primary air intake. The sawdust is in a feed tube that's up above here, and that comes down through, and you'll notice that it comes down kind of in a wedge. This is a grate that's right here, and the sawdust comes down that grate like that, so it's at an angle, and the sawdust comes down against this, and it's lit on this back side here, and it drives this gas. This is all pre-ignited and burning right here, but it drives that heat through the sawdust wedge. And that's what superheats the wood, drives the gas out of it, and then it's all funneled down through here. The draft is pulling it all through here. And right here is a secondary air intake, and that pulls the air through here, and it comes in here, and this is where the ignition is, in the combustion zone down in here, and it gets hot. So the hotter it gets, the harder the draft pulls, and it pulls it all up through here. The heat exchanger here, which is an old coal furnace, and then up and out the flue. That's the source of the draft. So This thing was made by, my understanding is the Hearn Ironworks out in Idaho. And there's a casting on the door that says Western Foundry, Portland, Oregon. I'm not sure if they just make the door or whatever. But the unit itself is... all the plates on it are cast iron. The tops, the sides, the insides, all the shakers and the grates and everything, they're all cast iron to take the heat. On this edge right here, on the top and the sides and the back end, it's a two-inch refractory. It's almost, they're almost like big, well, one single piece brick in there. It's all hand cast, so it'll take the heat in there. And like I say, that thing really gets wicked hot. I think it's rated at 312,000 BTUs, which is about enough to run three houses in the wintertime. In fact, that snowman, that heat exchanger in the back, one of the old donut things there, came out of a coal cellar furnace there somewhere along the line, and that's all hand cast refractory on the inside of it, on the lower section there, so that it'll take the heat. And I'll get that thing cherry red, almost to the point you think it's going to melt and into a big puddle on the floor. So
I'm going to pause that just for a second. Did you hear he said that thing generates enough heat to get heat three houses? If you look into these different types of gasifiers and the problems that they might have or whatever, you know, they're generating a lot of heat. Even when you're talking about using hydrogen for a heat source, you're talking about generating a lot of heat, and you got to be able to control that heat. Well, under the right circumstances, you could move that heat around, and this is just burning sawdust. You know, if you understand the physics of what's going on and how it's actually reburning the what would have otherwise been the exhaust or the smoke of this this material, which in this case is sawdust, which is a waste product of wood shops and people who cut firewood and stuff like that. So nothing's getting wasted, and this same exact process would basically be able to be used for any like leaves and grass clippings and stuff like that. You could put these leaves and grass clippings in, dry them out real good, and then basically grind them down into a finer dust and then use that as fuel. And so with that said, you'd be able to generate massive amounts of heat. If you had a system set up in, let's say, your neighborhood where this thing was centralized to all the homes that you wanted to heat, you could take a system like this and you could literally pipe heat from this thing all the way into each one of these homes. And nothing, you're not using any electricity whatsoever at this stage. You're just using basically the laws of physics in order to be able to, heat rises. So you got this thing centralized. All that heat is going through ductwork underneath the ground, so it's already well insulated, and then it's coming up and through the floors of the homes, and whatever, the home could use, then when it gets too hot in the house, you could vent the stuff off down either to the atmosphere outside or even ship it back into another place to where you can actually store that heat energy for later use, or use that heat energy to heat your water up, to keep your hot water heater going. By using that heat exchange system, if you had a hot water heater that was designed specifically to allow any excess heat from your furnace to translate through tubing that goes around inside there that is in contact with the water that's inside there, or the metal container that the water is actually being stored in, that heat will transfer. Hot's always going to go to cold, and so you would heat that water up, which means that your electric element in your hot water heater would never come on. And so if you're not using the electric heat, electric portion of your water heater, that makes you more efficient and drops your bill back down. So it's about the way that we're actually using the energy. If we guide the energy to where we want it to go, and even the wasted portion of it, what would have been normally wasted energy, which is the heat, you know, in the wintertime we need heat. Right? But even the way that we're generating heat is so incredibly inefficient. But this furnace right here is a step towards the right direction because of the way that it uses the fuel and the way that it actually reburns the exhaust before it ever even goes outside. And so, you know, you're taking and you're getting massive amounts of temperature. You know, he's saying that this one little unit that he's got is makes enough BTUs to heat three houses. That's pretty impressive. And he's heating his shop with it. So anyway, let's keep it rolling here.
Have to shut it down. The only way you do that is let it run out of fuel. So you just let it burn everything that it's got in it, and then it'll obviously shut down then because it doesn't have any fuel to go by. Now I'm going to pop the camera off of here a little bit. When I installed this thing, I poured that section of the floor specifically for this thing. There's a ash pit underneath it, so I cast the floor. Let me run this off of here. Okay, so I cast this floor. I poured the floor with this in mind. So the outside of the outside edge of this thing just barely straddled that floor. Now there's a pit underneath there, and that's about, I think it's 8 inches deep. And right down there, I've got some steel plates that are over the top of it, and they slide right up underneath the right under the edges of the furnace. Let me open up the door here, and that's the same on both sides.
What this guy is explaining right now is that underneath this furnace, he designed, you know, a pit where the ashes from whatever's left over burned from the sawdust falls down inside there. Of course, he'll get into the point where he tells you about how it produces very little ash, but what ash it does produce isn't getting wasted because he'll take that ash and he'll put it out there in his gardens and help to fertilize his gardens. Anyway, let's keep rolling here.
We've got a shaker grate on the inside also. I've taken some of the things out of here so that we can have a look at it. There's the handle for the shaker, and that operates. These guys right here. So we're ready. Keep in mind now, this is all... So when the ash gets building up on the thing there, you just give that a rack and it drops the ash down in there and keeps on going so it doesn't build up. There's quite a bit of fly ash that this thing creates, and I have just cleaned this thing out from a year's worth of, it's very efficient, and get a light in there. So you can see what it looks like down in the back there. And it doesn't make a whole lot of ash. I've burned about 15 cubic yards of material of sawdust. That's a whole dumpster's worth. And that's all fly ash that I've got out of this whole thing. And that is not very much. That 15 inches. And it's about 4 inches high. So, as you can see, not very much residue at all. There might be 5 or 10 gallons worth of five-gallon pail. There might be two of them down in the ash pit. So I have to pull those panels off every so often. I think I've done it twice since I've owned it. But I take these, slide these right out of here, and you can dig out the ash and whatnot, and put that in your garden, because that is real good for the garden. It likes that. It's a lot. And so I'm going to put this together, and we're going to have a little demonstration on what it does. In fact, I'll give you a quick little walk around here if I can get this thing to follow me. I've got it plugged in because I think I'm going to overload the battery here if I don't. So I've got a cord I've got to take along with me. But that's the heat exchanger. And that bent old twisted up thing there, that was in a stove I made years ago, and I was going to plumb some hot water through it, and I never got...
Okay, what he's showing right now in the video, and keep in mind, folks, these links are to these videos are all posted over there in the Super chat room, so if you want to take a peek at them to actually see what's going on. He's got a heat exchanger on the top of it that he was actually going to use to boil water and send that water, you know, through the floor of his house or whatever. And so right now he's just using it as radiant heat. But at the same thing, using these things in conjunction with each other, not only is this particular style of furnace really efficient and cuts down on waste byproducts such as the ash. You know, he showed a little pile of ash for a whole entire year, you know, about whatever size he mentioned there. I can't remember, about 4 inches tall pile. Anyway, that's not a lot of ash after that much burning of sawdust. And in the process of doing that, heat exchanger system, you know, as it's running through the floor, could also be recirculating through your hot water heater at the same time. So you're talking about raising your efficiency level up incredibly. You're getting the radiant heat off of it. You're getting the water heated from it. You're getting the circulation of that hot water actually through the floor itself. And so, you know, it gets to the point where you don't need to burn near as much fuel to do this. If you understand what it is I'm saying, there are ways that you could literally design all these different types of wood burners, oil burners, coal burners, and in this sawdust burner, which I never even knew they had a sawdust stove out there, but now that I do, I'm going to be in the lookout for one, because I'd like to have one. But using this type of scenario right here, you could literally burn any waste that comes out of your house, no matter what it is, you know, and you could burn that, and you could use that for heat during the winter time. And if you understand how heat exchange works, you can turn that heat into air conditioning as well. So, you know, you're only limited by your imagination of how far you actually want to take this thing. You know, you could build a smaller version of this right here for emergency backup heating system. I guess unless you live in, an apartment building, which is why I want to get into the plasma technology, because there's smaller units that could be produced that would use a small portion of electricity in order to produce a high voltage plasma that would, in turn, do the same job that this is doing. If you have access to as much power as coming out of that outlet, we got way more power coming out of that outlet than we actually need. And if you know how to use it properly, you could take that same amount of voltage and you could basically, with the equivalence of a coffee pot, making a pot of coffee, heat your entire house, if you understand what it is that I'm trying to say. Plasma, like I said, if you go look up the temperatures, the core of plasma ranges in temperatures between 11,000 and 14,500 degrees Fahrenheit. And so according to them, that limits its applicable uses. Well, you don't have to generate it up to that much. You don't have to turn it up that high. You could literally regulate the size of that plasma inside there. You could literally adjust it like tuning a radio. And not only can you get the the heat extracted from it, but the radiant energy, you can capture that energy in the form of electricity as well. So there's all kinds of pluses towards it. Now, of course, when you're messing around with high voltage, you know, you got to understand that it doesn't travel the same way as normal current does. And there are insulation factors that need to be considered, such as, you know, like that 20,000 volt oil burner igniter. When I'm sending the power through the Tesla coils and all the different custom coils that I design, and you know, you got the lights off, if you literally reach up there and touch the wires, you can see that there's actually plasma generated around it. The wires are glowing purple, and you can touch them and you can see that, that there's actual plasma around those wires themselves. And with the wire not being really insulated, you can literally take that, that plasma could get hot enough to literally burn through the wire and try to find a path to ground, that, that voltage. And so, you know, there are things to factor in, but they're not things that aren't, you know, aren't possible working with. I mean, matter of fact, if you look in the back of your TV set, some of the wiring that's used in the back of your TV set is high voltage wire that the insulation will, you know, withstand really high voltages, and you don't have to worry about it eating through the insulation. Your standard electrical wire, it's not designed for that type of voltages. It's designed for current and to keep it insulated away from other things where that, you know, can short out and stuff like that. But when it comes to high voltages, it's not designed for that. Even the the coating that goes on your copper wire for your coils, that insulation's not designed for those higher voltages. It's designed to keep it insulated at lower currents and lower voltages. But once you got that down and you understand that, you re-engineer a few things, you could literally make a high voltage heater at high frequencies that won't require near the input. If you go look at you know, some of the different things like the Slayer exciter circuits and how they're actually working, and you know, fast acting switches that are turning the power on and off at high frequencies, which is producing that plasma arc that you see at the top of it and giving you that wireless energy out the deal, it'll start making sense what I'm talking about. But even going back and looking at how these old things like the sawdust furnace or wood gasifier system, regular wood gasifier, or a oil burner system, those Beckett oil burner igniters, those were actually for, you know, igniting the fuel coming out of that oil burner. The thing about it was they weren't running. They didn't have to run constantly. Once that that system got up to running, it was the heat from the system itself that actually ignited the fuel on demand. You know, you get a piece of metal red hot, and then you spray a fine mist of oil on there, it will instantaneously ignite and basically keep that thing going. So the only time you ever have to use that high voltage, high frequency is in order to, you know, when the temperature drops down and you need to reignite it or whatever like that. So the efficiency of those oil burners are pretty incredible, but yet even those could be re-expanded upon and made even better. Let's finish out, see what else he's got to say here.
Around to doing that, but this thing is, needs to be resealed again. It's got some cracks on the where all the sections go together, and I just took some refractory and I sealed that all up, but for what we got to do today, it'll still be fine. So the top here, I've got it all covered over, because that's all cement board around the sides and everything, and it's insulated on the back side of it, so I can put a big blower fan right there that sits up in here on the top, and it circulates the hot air through the shop. So it goes up the pipe into that big wood stove that I have there, and I've got everything plumbed into that. I've got a rocket stove that does real well, likes burning pellets, except I think I got to take it apart. I think it burned it right out on the inside. It got so hot. So that's my big manifold. That I can put a lot of wood in there. I put a quarter of a quart at a time in that big puppy behind there, and that helps keep the shop lit. So there are two big doors on there, 20-inch doors, and we got to keep that thing fit. But this is the big shop. This is 20 feet to the rafters. It's 40 by 60, and we got the old car up there on the lift. And I got just about everything a guy could want in his barn here. So makes it pretty nice to be able to work in here.
Anyway, that's a pretty huge shop that he's heating with that system right there. He's also got some other systems that he can use as well. But the key is, it doesn't require electricity in order to do what it does. There's a second video to it, but I'm not going to go into that one. I'm going to go into this one right here.
When it's cold, like today, what's the first thing you do? You put the heating on. But the boilers so many of us have are outdated, and they rely on us having a supply of natural gas coming into our homes. As we move away from fossil fuels, we'll have to find new ways of keeping warm. Or, maybe, we can learn from old ways. In the 1950s, this magnificent coal-fired power station started doing something that's revolutionized the way we keep our homes warm. Coal-fired power stations generate electricity, but they're only about 40% efficient. This means most of the energy is wasted as heat. What this power station started doing just after World War II was capturing that waste heat and piping it across the river to a housing estate in Pimlico. This is the UK's first district heating scheme. Battersea Power Station closed in the 80s, but the district heating stayed. So, where did the heat supply come from? A coal-fired boiler was installed here in Pimlico. As coal went out of fashion, this was converted to gas and became a combined heat and power engine. Engines which now crisscross the UK, generating electricity and recovering the waste heat. This is used to heat up cold water, which is then dissipated around a network of pipes. And heat is dissipated in the right places, like your living room, and the cold return goes back to the plant to be reheated, and the process is repeated again. This lets us heat up the homes of over 3,000 people in Pimlico, as well as schools and businesses. But what if the heat demand isn't high enough? What do we do with the excess heat that's being generated? Well, we can store that in a thermal store. This is like a giant thermos flask, and Pimlico has the biggest one in the country. It can hold 2.3 million litres of boiling water. That's enough to make 9.7 million cups of tea. There are now 17,000 district heating networks in the UK, supplying heat to about 500,000 homes. This is projected to grow to 20% of all households by 2030. And the great thing about this technology is, if your heating's communal, as long as you've got those pipes in place, you can connect any heat source onto the other end. So that could be waste heat from a power station, it could be heat from burning rubbish, it could be a biomass or a biogas boiler, it could be solar arrays, ground source heat pumps, or whatever the technology of the future of heating is. Battersea Power Station is now being turned into luxury flats. But this whole area still needs heating. So, funnily enough, one of the first buildings to go up on the site of the old power station is going to be a new power station.
Well, that lady just pretty nicely explained what I've been saying there about guiding that wasted heat energy around where you want it to go. And so, with that said, if done properly, even electric heating would be so incredibly efficient. If you understand how plasma actually, how it actually works, and the temperatures that could be achieved by it, it's just extremely amazing. I want to start in with this one right here too.
Here we present the 5 best energy efficient space heater. Let's get started with the list.
All right, let's pause this for a second. I just remembered something I wanted to say. You don't even have to use electricity to produce plasma. If you heat up anything as far as like a liquid or a noble gas, if you heat it up and when it gets to a certain temperature and you keep putting heat to it, it will literally turn that gas into plasma. It will all them molecules in there slamming into each other, exchanging electrons, stealing electrons, and so on down the line, will generate yet even more heat. So you can use temperature to actually produce plasma. If you go and look into the GEAT reactor, then you'll see where, he took the exhaust off of it and he had a steel rod inside that exhaust, and it did basically the same thing as a catalytic converter in your car. The catalytic converter in your car is just nothing more than a reburner of waste fuel. It has a catalyst inside there that when, it gets really super hot and those exhaust fumes come down there, they get reignited and some of those gases get sent back up and goes down into the intake. But the majority of the fuel that you're burning in an internal combustion engine goes right out the exhaust pipe. And so by understanding those flaws in that system, now you got a starting point for re-engineering them to where these things could burn so incredibly efficient. When the lady was talking about trying to get away from fossil fuels, it makes my brain hurt to hear people say that, because fossil fuels in itself is a lie. All right, there ain't no such thing as fossil fuels. We live in a carbon-based world. Everything's carbon-based. Biological entities, including yourself. Whether it be grass, any type of plant. All the leaves that fall on the ground, even dirt. Even the soil on the ground is all fuel. And so, if you understand that, and you understand all these different possibilities of gasification and plasma technology, you get down to the point where even burning anything, it don't matter what it is. If you don't have a complete burn, then you're gonna release exhaust, whether it be carbon monoxide or even some instance carbon dioxide, but for the most part it's carbon monoxide. But either way, that gas itself has carbon on it. That carbon can be reburned. So you could take and you don't even have to necessarily scrub it off. You rerun the exhaust until the exhaust has no more fuel capabilities to it. So you're talking about achievable, super efficient engines that could literally reuse the fuel multiple times before it's ever even exhausted out. And when it finally does get exhausted out, the only thing you got is oxygen coming out the other end, or water vapor coming out the other end. And it doesn't defy any of the known laws of physics. What I've been trying to say to people, it doesn't defy any of them. All these people keep on trying to give me a rash and saying, that's got losses in the system and it goes against the laws of thermodynamics and blah, blah. They're telling you a million and one reasons why something cannot be done because they have put limitations on themselves and they just don't understand the physics of what I'm trying to tell them, which is, basic science. If there's something in that system that is wasteful, and that something is heat. heat energy. Every time you use any type of energy, you generate heat. That's why we have to have, you know, cooling systems. That's why we have to have lubricants. Otherwise, you wouldn't have to have those things. But by using that energy, those forces are producing heat. And so what would have normally been an obnoxious deal, you turn around and flip that model upside down, and now you're generating heat intentionally, doing things that you already know are causing heat by using that energy. So using the energy in a different fashion ain't no different than using it the normal conventional way, but it makes the way that you're doing it more incredibly efficient, because you don't have to put near the amount of power in order to get the same amount of work done. So when you're burning your fuel in your car and it's only 30% efficient, then you have to ask yourself, where is the rest of that energy going? Science says energy can neither be created nor can it be destroyed. So that means, where's it going? Well, your engine block is getting hot, which means underneath the hood of your car is getting hot. The hood of the car is getting hot. Some of that heat's transferring inside the cab of the vehicle, and so if it ain't well insulated between the firewall and you, then it'll get hotter than heck up inside there. And if you got any type of leaks in the ventilation or the exhaust, some of those leftover fuel exhaust carbon monoxide can get up inside the cab as well. But if you understood what I was trying to say, then you wouldn't have no heat in the engine, with exception of in the cylinder, which is the only place you need it. And then the rest of that, the exhaust would be recycled back into the system so that you could reburn that fuel a second time, a third time, until it finally has absolutely no combustible source to it left at all. And it's not even rocket science. But I don't understand why people haven't grabbed this concept and ran with it. The GEAT reactor basically was able to burn trash, you know, and the way that it's working was exactly what I was saying earlier, where how you can produce plasma using heat. You don't have to have electricity to produce plasma. All you have to be able to do is get those molecules moving rapidly. And the hotter something gets, the more rapidly these molecules are moving. And just like the electricity. The electricity, when you're using a high voltage arc going through, you know, a system, and it's going into that gas, it makes that gas not only conductible, but it gets those molecules inside there bouncing around and bashing into each other and stealing electrons and, you know, so on down the line. And it gets hot. It gets incredibly hot. With that said, the amount of input to that as opposed to the standard model is a large difference. It's ridiculous how large of a difference. You're talking about 12 volts in the milliamp range, capable of producing 20,000 volts of electricity at a high frequency that has the capability of literally, you know, producing temperatures 11,000 to 14,500 degrees Fahrenheit. That's a heck of a lot of BTUs when you come to think about it. And then if you need that heat energy to be able to be transferred in without melting something, you know, using the same laws of physics, you can turn around and you can guide that energy to where you want it to go. You can literally focus that heat energy. You build in, these engines the way that you're doing it in the standard model right here, they're self-destructive. Most internal combustion engines run anywhere from 180 to 220 degrees Fahrenheit. 160 to 180 to 220 degrees Fahrenheit, and that heat continues to get exponential. It keeps rising. You keep heating something, you don't have to sit there and constantly keep a flame on something to keep it hot. You raise it up to its temperature, you shut the flame off, but when you're talking about an internal combustion engine, it's constantly putting heat to it. And so you have to constantly try to disperse that heat. So we use radiator systems, a water jacket inside the engine, and use air cooling portions on parts of it. And we're trying to send that heat out into the atmosphere so that, you know, it gets away from the engine. The moment one of those systems fails, well, that engine will generate so much heat that it'll quite literally destroy itself. And once you understand that, what's going on, then you go back to the question of why are we putting so much heat to these deals. Anyway, let's keep rolling here.
Starting of our list at number 5. This LeFiSmart large room infrared radiant heater is perfect for warming up larger spaces in your home or workplace. You'll be surprised at how much heat it can produce, and within minutes if switching it on, you could be enjoying comfortable and warming infrared rays. As this unit is remote controlled, you'll be able to relax wherever you're sitting or lying whilst you change the settings on this heater. You can also control the heater from the unit itself if you wish. At number 4. This is a great portable and energy efficient heater when you want to save floor space and have an effective heater for your home. It is easy to use and requires no setup or assembly so that you can use it straight away. A button at the top of the heater allows you to turn it on with a simple press, and a digital display allows you to see at a glance what temperature the unit is running at. You can also choose from low or high speed settings to suit your needs and room size. To ensure that the heater disperses heat evenly around the room, it features an oscillating function. This allows the heater to send the warmth in all directions and not just straight ahead. For more information, check out the description underneath the video. Halfway of our list at number 3. This portable infrared heater is a great choice when you want versatility and when you're looking for a comfortable heating solution. As this heater uses radiant infrared heat, you'll be able to enjoy a more natural feeling warmth, as well as energy efficient operation. This infrared heater won't dry out the air like many other portable heaters can do. Where other heaters warm the air and simply dry out the moisture that's in it, this Dr. Infrared Heater portable space heater will simply warm up the objects that are in front of it. This leaves the air feeling more comfortable. Although the air may feel better, however, often the winter air can feel dry and uncomfortable. At number 2. This unusual yet effective MeCare panel heater from De'Longhi will give you instant heat with 1500 watts of power output. You will be able to enjoy completely quiet operation as well as a new and stylish way to heat your home. No matter what your current decor is, this heater is unlikely to look out of place despite its unusual heating method. It comes with a thermostat that is integrated into the heater. This allows you to select the operating temperature and switch between the two heat settings. The high settings ensure that you get a powerful 1500 watt heat output, whilst the lower setting is half power at 750 watts. And coming in at number 1 of our list. This stunning electric stove will be the perfect centerpiece for your larger living room. This is a 4600 British thermal units heater that can offer plenty of supplemental zoned heating in your home. It produces heat that is capable of warming up to 400 square feet. The heater features a cabinet-style enclosure with our viewing door. Behind the viewing, the door is a realistic-looking flame effect, which can be used with or without the heat function. The realistic flame also features glowing logs and an ember bed. This provides a relaxing and warming visual piece in your room. For more information, check out the description underneath the video. Thanks for watching our video. For more, subscribe to our channel, and don't forget to like and share this video.
Alright, so that was a list of 5 best space heaters and such like that. And, you know, you'd be surprised when you go out there and look and try to find things like, plasma heating systems, how hard it is to get any kind of information, or even doggone space heaters, which ones are most efficient and stuff like that. Well, you have to kind of have an understanding of how these things are actually working. You know, the ceramic heaters are pretty impressive. That last one that he mentioned is some little miniature fireplace looking heaters, and I've been using those for a long time, and they seem to be pretty good. However, they'll still, cost you an electric bill. you know, they go, you can either run them at 750 or you can run them at 1500 watts. And, you know, they're pretty doggone efficient. I've got little smaller space heaters. That's basically what I heat my entire house with, is space heaters, in this particular building here. The other house over there, we got a heat pump system. And, you know, until it gets down to around about zero, there's a secondary element in those heat pumps that you don't want to kick on, because it will rack your light bill way up, you know, through the roof. And, you know, I've got some industrial ones on the side of this building right here, but they just, you don't want to use those, because when it does get down to zero, I don't know what the, somebody's having problems listening in. The only thing I can tell you is refresh your browser. Well, you couldn't hear me even say that, so doggone it. Anyway, I don't know how to solve that problem. And, doggone it. Somebody's having problems getting on. Could somebody in the chat room help Yolance figure out how to get the player to work on there? It depends on what software they got. Anyway, I wish I could help with that, but I can't at the moment. So let's move on to this one right here. The future of heating.
According to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, about 12 million U.S. homes use electric heat pumps, primarily in the Southeast. A traditional heat pump warms a home by drawing heat from the outside air. When exterior temperatures drop below the balance point, or the point at which standard heat pumps can no longer supply enough heat, a less efficient auxiliary heating system kicks in to keep the house warm. What if there were a system with greater flexibility? Introducing the Advanced Residential Heating System. This new technology would combine an advanced heat pump with a variable gas or electric furnace in a cohesive system that is more efficient, more resilient, and more flexible. This new system could lower energy costs, enhance customer resilience, and improve demand response. Heating systems need electricity to power the fan that moves air throughout the home. By pairing an advanced residential heating system with customer-sited generation technology and integrated battery storage, the system can heat the home even during a power outage. The Advanced Residential Heating System, efficiently meeting energy needs for customers in the grid.
So, what I've been trying to point out for a long time is that what that video there was actually talking about, that even after the power goes off, you still have a storage and you can still heat your home in emergency situations without having to worry about it. You know, if you're on all electric and you basically lose power from the grid, you got a problem. You know, especially, you know, summertime with AC or your refrigerators or freezers and stuff like that. But all these problems can be solved, and even the heating problem can be solved with some supplementary systems that would keep these things going. You know, if you think about what I said about the redneck hot tub, and how you could actually take that coffee pot element and all you had to do was keep putting heat to it. The same concept could be applied for home heating as well. If you have a circuit built, you know, with some transistors or power MOSFETs, and you have a power supply such as, you know, a solar panel, charging up batteries, and then you use a small amount of power to basically pulse these circuits that are pulsing coils that are producing higher voltages that are sending this plasma into a chamber that is used to heat whatever gas or medium that you're using to heat your home normally, you could build systems that would be able to combine with your existing system without any kind of modifications outside of, something wrapped around a certain pipe that basically will transfer that heat energy to where you want it. So, the implications are unlimited. Let me see what this one here is. HHO home heater.
Hi, it's Dave D. And today I'm going to report on a device I'm building. And you see it before you. It's essentially the raw prototype of a home heater. And it uses HHO or hydrogen and oxygen separately. And we'll test it both ways to see how this works. For today, I'm not able to actually test it because we don't have the electronics for handling the ignition of the hydrogen within the device. But this is the hydrogen reactor. It's a monatomic hydrogen reactor, and it has two different plugs. One is a, I guess you'd call it a hydrogen plasma injector plug. The hydrogen actually goes right through and enters the plug. And we'll scoot around here and get a closer look how that sets up. Okay, hydrogen enters right there, and a plasma ignition by Aaron Murakami will provide the plasma arc that will fire off within the reactor chamber, which is the heavy-duty chamber there. It's about an inch thick of steel, taking no chances. And then there is a secondary outlet, and this outlet, see if we can get a peek at it. Let's see. Right there. Whoops. Nope. Right there. Okay. That is where the oxygen can come in. And that can be plugged off and just use ambient air with a vent to allow air into there. But that tends to explode the hydrogen. within the chamber, we have it's filled with catalyst in a platinum screen. And well, it's actually not a platinum screen, it's a stainless steel screen. Ideally it would be platinum. And this reactor, the heat exchanger, is attached to the tall, I guess you'd call it a infrared heating device. It's essentially filled with sand and a salt mix in a stainless steel center tube that's fillable, and the hydrogen, then the combustion of the hydrogen will take place and flow right through the sand, heating this up and exit the top. And there's a cap that goes with this, and the cap will take the water vapor from the combustion of hydrogen and oxygen, and it will condense it, and it'll flow down into a reservoir. So that's the setup. The power for the device, the hydrogen generator, is a PEM 1000, which I sell. It's a very reliable unit, uses proton exchange membrane and distilled water, and there's no electrolyte. So this is very safe to breathe. There's only water vapor is the only exhaust at all. There's no live particles or anything else. You could use this for health, or it's also safe as an appliance in the household. So that device puts out a considerable amount of pure hydrogen and also pure oxygen in that 2-to-1 ratio that you find in water. So that's the device we're building. This is obviously just a prototype. Doesn't have a case. Doesn't have any mountings. I could fire this off. I have fired it off, and it makes about a 3-inch flame that shoots out from that little hole there. But this cap is actually replaced, and this unit attaches directly to the base. So that goes off, the cap comes off, and it ties into there, and then the reaction takes place right in this heat exchanging cylinder. So we are looking for, oh, you'd call it early adopters. If you're interested and you have building skills or distribution skills, you'll be able to donate and be on the list to receive the rights to manufacture this unit, and we'll have it all simplified with all the prototype drawings and everything down to a retail version that is ready to go that you can build, and or you can distribute it if you're not into building. So only those people who donate to get this thing built and put together in a good fashion for the market will be notified when it's time to purchase a unit. And as part of the purchase of the unit, you'll also get the manufacturing and distribution rights. So stay tuned, look for the donate button. Anything over $10 will qualify you to go to the next step. Thank you, Dave D. Over and out.
All right, so, you know, basically, that's a hydrogen fuel cell type of deal, hydrogen reactor that basically burns the hydrogen and heats up a salt reactor inside there. Gets the salt is when it gets molten, it literally will, you know, hold heat like a thermos. And so that's another example. And I want to address something real quick. Anon 5257 said they're shutting us out, Shaziz, which there's folks that are having problems listening to the show, and I've been having this issue for a little bit of time. They're actually my server that I normally use to broadcast the Auto DJ so that there's 24-hour content going on. For some reason, the license just up and disappeared on it. And so I can't use the Auto DJ, and hopefully I'll get that resolved. I may have to just go with a completely different company and try to do that for, you know, broadcasting the Auto DJ whenever there's not a live show going on. But this information that I'm talking about, you know, there are folks out there that don't want this information out. And I've been trying this for a long time, trying to get information to everybody about, you know, these ideas, hoping that people will take these ideas and run with it. But the industry out there is fighting so hard against it that, you know, these technologies that we're talking about, combining these technologies together, could build things. And, you know, this guy that you just listened to, he's making a hydrogen heating system, but he's trying to find investors out there. And that's another hard thing to do. And there's a lot of people who, you know, tried to go down the same doggone road that the system basically tried to make it out like they were criminals, and, you know, they got accused of fraud and all kinds of other stuff. So what I'm trying to show everybody out here, in order to keep myself out of that kind of same doggone predicament, I'm not trying to get any money off of anybody. I'm not asking for donations. I'm trying to get people to come together, and together we use our combined resources, you know, to build these things. Like if it was a case of I already had the money, if I had a fraction of what this this government has wasted out there on supposed research, if I had a fraction of the finances and the resources available, we wouldn't even be having this conversation right now, because it would already be a done deal. You would have working prototypes in your hands. You know, whether it be an engine that would run on pure distilled water, which, you know, the educated idiots out there want to try to tell everybody that that's not possible, which they don't understand the simple laws of physics. There are four states of matter. You know, you got a solid, a liquid, a gas, and then that, what the next stage in line is plasma. And that plasma is a lot of heat. The problem that we're having with all of our devices is heat. Heat is the waste byproduct. And if you understand that, you could turn that heat into a plus, a positive. You know? And you gotta run a fan in order to get rid of the doggone heat. In the process of running the fan motor itself is generating yet even more heat. So, you know, what I've been saying to everybody, and what the educated idiots out there are trying to say to everybody, they're trying to say things can't be done. Well, if they can't be done, why are we having so much trouble getting a radio show out there? You know, why are we having so much trouble when people can't even listen in? We got all this technology. We got these browsers and everything that are you know, I got several different types of browsers running at the same time. And each one of these browsers have issues where, you know, because of Google's shenanigans, it'll tell you our site ain't safe. It'll tell you peopleforpeople.ning ain't safe, which is a lie. I pay for secured certificates. There is nothing wrong with my site, but Google deems it not to be safe, so that makes it hard for me to bring traffic in here. Somehow I got to get the word on the other side of the fence, hey, it's all right to come in here. You're not going to get spied on or hacked or, you know, viruses or malware. We're not doing that. We're not even gathering up anybody's information. The chat room that we use at Chatango, you know, if you want to use that chat room, you can come in there anonymously. You don't even have to sign up for it. And so, you know, here at Shaziz Radio, we're not gathering up anybody's information. You don't even have to have a password to get on to Shaziz Radio. Unless you go to Shaziz.net in a certain section where, you know, it's password protected, because eventually there's going to be information available on that site that, you know, is going to go to, you know, people. And once it's all said and done, you'll understand why it is that I'm doing things the way that I'm doing them. But either way, you know, it's just aggravating, because we should be so much further advanced than what we are right now. But we're being hindered by even the same people that are supposedly trying to talk about save the planet. You know, plasma technologies and electricity is going to be the future of our energy use. It's going to be the future of heating. And, you know, there's no getting around it. They're working their way gradually towards it. You take your hand and you put it up on a monitor, your computer monitor, and you got plasma technology in there, and you can feel heat coming off of that. Well, that ought to tell you something. And so, with that said, you know, even fluorescent bulbs get warm, and halogen bulbs. When you get that halogen energized and that white light's coming off, you got that bright white light. That's some heat. That's why they tell you not to touch them bulbs, because they'll put a blister the size of Texas on your finger. So, you know, it's not that we don't have the information necessary. It's that we don't have the cooperation. We don't have the manpower, that the people willing to get together and do things. People with skill set, people with tools, people willing to pull resources in order to make things a reality. Everything that I built, I either built out of recycled materials, or if I did get any help financially, I built prototypes that I share freely with the person that helped me out, and so on down the line, and I share it freely with everyone on my YouTube channel. I share all these ideas. But, you know, what's going on here is that I'm on my own as far financially goes. 99% of the time, I'm completely financially supporting myself in this endeavor. And I'm reaching out to people out there to build what I like to call the dream team, as far as people who are going to actually put things together. all these things that I keep talking about, an idea is just an idea until you actually get the doggone thing, you know, built into a prototype. And most folks seeing is believing. Let's go to this one right here.
Hello and welcome to Just Have a Think. So last week we had a look at hydrogen storage, and I think it's fair to say it's been a pretty interesting week since then. More than 80,000 people watched that video, and 6,000 new subscribers have joined the channel just in the last 7 days, which is absolutely phenomenal, and a massive thank you to all of you. There's obviously some strength of feeling out there on both sides of the hydrogen debate, and that came through loud and clear in your comments last week. There was quite a bit of feedback suggesting that there wasn't enough emphasis in last week's programme on the inherent inefficiencies of the hydrogen conversion process, and that's a perfectly reasonable observation. In fact, it's something we looked at in the video that we did last September, which you can click and have a look at up there. But in the meantime,
I got to pause this for a second, because what he's talking about, what he just said about how inherently hydrogen production is inefficient because they don't understand what Stan Myers was doing back in the 70s. They don't understand that there are easier ways to separate the water molecule than using the standard electrolysis process. So with that said, hydrogen production, the way that they're talking about doing it, yeah, it's going to be a problem. It's going to be not energy efficient. It's the standard model doesn't work. Stan Myers figured out a way around it. I know a way around it. And by the time it's all said and done, you'll know a way around it. If you take water and you boil that water, and water will boil at 212 degrees Fahrenheit at sea level. And then whenever it boils in the steam, that steam will expand 1,600 times its volume. And so when you think about all this steam pressure, and you keep on adding heat to it, what happens when you constantly keep on adding heat to it? It gets to the point where those water molecules are moving so rapidly that it begins to separate the molecule. It begins to separate the hydrogen. It begins to separate the oxygen. And between the temperature and the pressure and the separation of those molecules, then you literally end up with a hydrogen explosion. Well, it's kind of you get both. You get the best of both worlds. You get an implosion from the hydrogen and an explosion from the oxygen. So either way, you're talking about massive amounts of power. If you could do what I was talking about with plasma, you can literally ionize plasma or hydrogen into the fourth state of matter. And, you know, eventually something's got to give. But either way, if you understand what I just said, the basic science of the whole deal is you boil something and keep on boiling and keep on boiling it, you're going to reach a critical mass at some point. Something's got to give, the heat or the pressure. And so, you know, hydrogen, you know, for heating generation is not implausible. It is more than possible. And the way that we generate the hydrogen, the way that we separate the water molecule into its two separate components, there are easier ways to do it than what the standard model believes.
Here's a quick summary. Water electrolysis loses about 30% of the energy that's put into the reaction. There's a slightly more efficient version called proton exchange membrane electrolysis, which improves the output from 70 to 80%, but this is still a lot less efficient than the 99% charging efficiency of a lithium-ion battery. Freezing hydrogen to about 20 degrees above absolute zero loses around 40% of the available energy, whereas pressurization loses about 13%, so pressurization tends to be the more common option. Transporting the fuel can cost anything between 10% and 40% of the energy, depending on the transport method and the distance of travel. And then you've got energy losses inside the fuel cell. Modern hydrogen fuel cells are about 60% efficient. The other 40% is mostly heat loss. Taking everything into account, you get an overall efficiency for lithium-ion vehicle batteries of about 75% compared to 35% for hydrogen fuel cells, which equates to a cost per mile for hydrogen fuel cell vehicles that's about 8 times higher than the cost of lithium-ion battery-powered vehicles. So for small personal vehicles, it's fair to say that hydrogen has got an uphill battle in the marketplace. But by the way, let's not forget that internal combustion engines can only operate at about 20 to 30% efficiency because the majority of their energy is lost to heat. So in any comparison, ICE engines come out as the poor relation. Some of you also
pause
felt
that for a second. Alright, so what you're listening to the man talk about the internal combustion engine and the majority of the energy wasted in heat. Folks, if you got a generator out there and you're running that generator and it's generating a lot of wasted heat, and you take that heat off the water jacket, you circulate it through your house in order to heat your house, so now you got a two for one going on. You got the electricity being generated by it, and you got the wasted heat being guided into your house, so now you got a two for one kind of deal. And if you take in and you modify that engine to run off of different things like hydrogen or, you know, wood gas or, you know, any type of syngas or even biodiesels and stuff like that, then you make it yet even more efficient. You can literally take these doggone generators and you can get them to do multiple tasks all in one shot and for less amount of fuel. Just by the way that we're injecting the fuel into these engines is inefficient. But if we take and learn from everything they've been trying to say on the Mad Science Show for the longest time, you can make these doggone engines so incredibly energy efficient that you could afford to run one. You could have your home, your own home generating power plant that would not only just generate your heat, it would heat your water, it would heat your home, and you could run this thing 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, and be able to afford to do so, and turn around, and instead of having a trash bill, that trash now becomes part of your fuel source. And then if you're going to clean your yard up, and you've got grass clippings, you've got sticks laying around, you could run that all that stuff in and turn it into a fuel source as well. And the exhaust coming out of the doggone thing, if it was done properly, would not have any CO2 or carbon monoxide, either carbon monoxide or carbon dioxide coming out of there, because of the way that you're going to recycle the exhaust, because there's still fuel in that exhaust. And so, if you understand what it is that I've been trying to say, there is no such thing as waste. It's only wasted if you don't utilize it. If you got the majority of your fuel going out the exhaust pipe, then you're not using that, you're not getting a perfect burn. And if you ain't getting a perfect burn, then you got all that waste going out. The majority of all the fuel you put in your engines goes out the exhaust pipe. That's a waste. That's ridiculous. You know, it's not all being burned. And I've tried to talk to some people who, you know, claim to be mechanics, and I try to explain them to this, and they're like, oh, well, no, it takes so much fuel in order to get down the road, you know, to transfer that energy. And I'm like, yeah, whatever, man. You're using the fuel wrong. If your engine's only 30% efficient, then where's the rest of that efficiency going? It's going out the tailpipe. It don't take all that fuel to get down the road. Imagine if you get as far as you go with 30% efficiency, imagine what you could do if you had 100% efficiency. So you go 100 miles off of a gallon of gas and then turn around because you've increased your efficiency. 30%, is all you're getting to start. Now you increased your efficiency to 100%. You're getting over 300% farther than you would have before with the same amount of fuel. That's the whole thing. Everything, the way that we're heating our homes is so incredibly efficient. You see something like an internal combustion engine that wastes as much energy as it does. It gets the job done. A lot of people say if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Well, yeah, it does work. But if you're hollering about carbon emissions, if you're hollering about the exhaust coming out of it, then why aren't we working towards making these engines run cleanly and super efficiently? The only place you need that heat is in the cylinder. That is the only place in the internal combustion engine that you need that heat is in the cylinder. When it comes down to electrical appliance, electrical motors, you don't need that excess heat in the coils, the windings of your transformers or your electric motor. You don't need that heat there. It's a negative. But if you take that heat off of that doggone thing, even electric cars have a cooling system for the electrical because of the way they're shoving the energy to that doggone engine, or that electric motor. So there ain't no such thing as wasted energy unless you're doing it in the standard model. In which case, yeah, okay, you couldn't get things to run themselves because of the way that you're using it. You're not doing it right. Anyway, let's keep going with this.
Engines can only operate at about 20 to 30% efficiency because the majority of their energy is lost to heat. So in any comparison, ICE engines come out as the poor relation. Some of you also felt that hydrogen was just a backdoor way of allowing the fossil fuel producers to continue producing fossil fuels. After all, as we mentioned last week, the industrial process of steam reforming produces hydrogen by splitting natural gas, otherwise known as methane, or methane in the United States, a process which releases CO2. And the concept of adding hydrogen to existing methane natural gas pipelines as a kind of bridging fuel to ease down natural gas production will, some say, also allow the fossil fuel companies to fudge their figures and make it look like they're doing a much better job than they really are. And one or two of you over there in the United States also suggested that any grid-level implementation of hydrogen is just shifting the emphasis from one monopolistic power producer to another, allowing the shadowy money men to maintain their grip on power and still control the prices that you and I pay for our energy. They're all valid points that deserve the benefit of full debate, which is probably something that's outside the scope of a single program. But as with every single other disruptive technology that human beings have ever invented, from the telegraph and the internal combustion engine in the 19th century to renewable energies and the internet today, there will always be a body of opinion that instinctively looks for reasons not to continue with its development. And that's no bad thing in a way. It keeps the developers on their toes, and it probably does occasionally weed out the really wacky ideas from the mix. In one sense, here in Europe, and particularly in continental Europe, that fear of monopolistic centralised control that I spoke about a moment ago is just as prevalent as it is over there in the United States. Over here, though, the anxiety is all about Europe's heavy reliance on Russian methane gas. European governments feel an acute sense of vulnerability to the vagaries of Mr. Putin's regime, as was so graphically demonstrated when Russia's gas giant Gazprom turned off Ukraine's gas supply in the middle of the harsh 2018 winter. Here in the UK, our government policy is guided by our very own Climate Change Committee, or CCC. They're the people who earlier this year recommended a pathway by which the UK could reach net zero carbon emissions by 2050. Part of that pathway would see the UK government pushing ahead with the development of hydrogen. The committee's report made these summary...
I'm going to pause this for a second. Look, I don't know how to do this. Literally. How could I get to talk to these groups, climate change, what the heck you call them, committees or whatever? Because if I could tell them things that I'm telling you right now, if they could just hear one of my radio shows, or even come on Skype and join in on one of these radio shows, would they listen? Or do they even care? Do they have their hand in the back pocket of the industries out there? Because I don't understand why it is that, you know, I'm sitting here talking about solutions to all these problems, but yet none of these people are coming to the table. It don't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense at all. They got these committees that are talking about how we got to reduce climate change and all this kind of carbon footprint ridiculousness, and it's all political. But nobody comes to the table and says, "Hey, well, we heard you had some good ideas. Can you share?" And I'm like, "Yeah, I've been waiting for you to show up forever." You know. And I've even thrown down the gauntlet to different scientists out there and people out there, physicists and mechanics and all that. And it just seems like, everyone just keeps poo-pooing the ideas. It's just sheer ridiculousness is what it is. And that's why I'm reaching out to the people, the actual people. Forget the government, forget the doggone system, forget the corporations. you know, we're going to have to do this, because they're not. They're not going to do it. Even these climate change committees, they're not going to do it. You know, they have access to funds. They gave the United Nations so many millions of dollars for doing research. Where's that money? It didn't go towards research, not any type of research that I've ever heard of. None of these alternative energy researchers out there working on hydrogen technology and plasma technology and better ways to use electricity. You don't see any of them getting any funding. You don't see them getting any backing. No, what you do see is you see them hindering Shaziz Radio and People for People Radio. You see them messing around with our servers. You see them doing all kinds of things, making it harder for anybody to get to this information. I have podcast after podcast after podcast for so many years, it's hard to even say how many podcasts are out there where I'm talking about this stuff over and over and over again ad nauseum. I'm sitting there trying to explain in graphic detail to the simplest part as possible that this is what we can do. I can't get this information past this doggone brick wall for some reason. It don't make any sense. It just blows my mind that, you know, all this information, all this proven science, and people can't put these pieces of the puzzle together. What's the gig here? Why is it that I'm having such a hard time, and people who want to listen into this kind of stuff are having such a hard time? Man, it says I got over 8,000 some odd subscribers on my YouTube channel. The video views don't match it. Imagine if I had 100,000 subscribers on there and actually could earn some money from the doggone ad revenue when they do the videos. You know, pennies on the dollar as opposed to what YouTube makes. But even the Google ads that you put on your websites in order to try to, you know, compensate yourself for some of the cost of actually maintaining a website. If they played this game fairly, then I would be making more than enough money to fund my own doggone research. You know? And I don't want to put, out in the front of the doggone website, you know, donate and please give me money kind of thing. I'm not like that because it's not what I'm doing this for. You know? There is a donation button stashed on the website because somebody talked me into putting it on there. But I don't advertise it. I don't point it out. You know, I'm not sitting here saying, every time you listen to one of my radio shows, give me money, give me money. I'm not doing that because of two things. One is, I don't want people to try to say that I'm trying to be out here ripping people off. No, I'm giving you the product for free and letting you go out there and tell the world how to replicate it. I'm giving you the information that has been gathered by all these different people, the proven science. And begging you to take it and run with it, to work on these ideas together and build it. You know, I'm not here to get rich. I'm not here to get famous. You know, I'm not in this for fame, fortune, or notoriety. I'm in this to try to solve the problem that they keep claiming we got. And in the process of doing that, I'm always getting suppressed. You know, it's ridiculous of what has occurred within the last couple months on this deal anyway, because of the way that, you know, suddenly my license for broadcasting, it disappears off the site. I can't use my auto DJ. People can't get to the deal to listen in. You know, they have to go through back doors just to listen in on a show that is trying to solve a problem that they said that we had in this world. That's ridiculous. Right now, I should have tons and tons of people listening in on this. I should have tons of comments in there where people are interacting, sharing these ideas with each other. You got people out there protesting Save the Planet. You got a little girl running amok out there with a bunch of adults exploiting this little girl, using her for a political agenda, and they're saying that they're going to save the planet. They're saying we only got 12 years left and all this kind of crud, and I'm giving you the doggone answers to it, and you're not listening? So you either don't want it to happen, or you're just using that deal in order to make yourself some money, to get yourself some notoriety. I've tried to contact presidents, I've tried to contact senators, congressmen, and women, and people of all different places in all different countries, And the response that I got was a big fat zero. The only thing that I've ever got a response from was from individuals who were trying to find the answers themselves. When they didn't get the answer that they wanted, or it didn't conform to what they believed in, they just poo-pooed the idea and ran off. And I'm trying to say, well, try it before you deny it, and then maybe you'll succeed. And I spent a lifetime studying science. You know, I spent a lifetime, you know, studying how things work. I got this ability in my brain to see things in my brain, how things are actually functioning in nature, and I understand the physics of it. When people try to misquote the laws of physics to me, it drives me insane because they don't even understand the words that are coming out of their mouth. They're just being a parrot. Anyone can say Polly want a cracker, but it takes somebody a little bit more special to literally look inside the machine and tell you in graphic detail exactly how it's functioning. I got the knowledge in my head on how to resolve these so-called energy crises, and I'm trying to convey it out there to people who have the resources and the capabilities to literally take these ideas and steal them and run with them. Go claim them for yourself. Get a patent on it. Get a copyright. Make yourself rich. I don't care. As long as I see it out there being used and people that need it are getting access to it, I'm willing to share this information. I've been willing to share this information. I've been doing this for so long, it makes my head hurt. Doggone it, man. I need help. I need somebody to spread links. I need somebody to go out there and put posters on the wall telling all the climate you know, complainers, you know, hey, check this guy out. Check this guy out. Listen to what he has to say, you know. They'll get mad at me because I'm telling them right how it is. What they're doing out there is ridiculous. They're hindering their own process. They're out there protesting, and for what? They're not getting no results. They're not going to get no results. We're on the petrol dollar. The entire world is on the petrol dollar, and so it's their economy, their rules. They don't want anything like free energy out there. So they'll send trolls out there to poo-poo free energy. Oh, there ain't no such thing as free energy. And even some people within my own circle who think themselves to be really highly educated will still be apologists for the system and say, no, there ain't no such thing as free energy. You got to buy this to get that and this and that, whatever. You can't get something for nothing. I ain't talking about getting something for nothing. I'm talking about taking what nature's already provided, utilizing it in a respectful and a harmonious manner, and getting the work done that you need done. It's that simple. You know, you don't have to take it into the rocket science. You don't have to be classified as perpetual motion, over unity, or zero point. You're just talking about taking the energy that you have laying at your feet, quite literally. Everything out there is fuel. And so you understand that, and you understand the physics of what it takes to get this to do that. You turn this into all kinds of fuel. And as far as the exhaust portion, I've been over this ad nauseum. There's ways to clean the exhaust so ridiculously clean that you can literally go up there and put your lips on the doggone exhaust pipe and inhale it for a month and never get even so much as dizzy. I'm telling you, this is mind-blowing. Yeah, how much of a hard time that you have trying to explain people. So the future of heat is going to be in plasma. It's going to be in electricity. And, you know, eventually when we get to understanding more about plasma technologies, we'll have all the other nifty gizmos that we thought about, you know, in the science fiction realm as well. This ain't science fiction anymore. It's science fact. We have plasma reactors. There's been a plasma reactor since the late 1800s, early 1900s. It was called a mercury arc rectifier. You know, it's been around. It was around before that. People just didn't understand what it was until they finally did get it, until we're up here in the year 2020, and I'm sitting there telling you, you know, the temperature of plasma, according to, you know, when you Google it up, the core of plasma ranges in temperatures from 11,000 degrees to 14,500 degrees Fahrenheit, and they're saying, thus limiting its applicable uses, because at those temperatures you'll melt anything. You see that right there? You'll melt anything. So if you're wanting to build a foundry or a forge to melt steel or, you know, any types of materials, those temperatures well exceed what's necessary in order to literally do that. So, yeah, Troy said too much oxygen can make you dizzy, Shaz. Well, there you go. So, but what I'm trying to get at is the fact that, you know, you're not worried about normal carbon dioxide or carbon monoxide. Carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide, they got similar things, like they're heavier than oxygen and both will displace oxygen, but carbon monoxide is more dangerous because it will literally poison you. Carbon monoxide poisoning. But carbon dioxide, well, is just dangerous as well because it will suffocate you. And so you understand that. But it's not a toxic waste. It's just the fact that you don't realize what the heck is going on. Plants love it. Plants love both carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide. That's how they get their sugar. That's how they get their food. You know? Once you understand the basic science, the basic physics, the basic mechanics of everything, you got it licked. Now all you got to do is get the people to stop engineering things in such a crummy fashion. And, you know, you don't even have to give up your gasoline engine. Just re-engineer it to run better, to run using less fuel. There are methods by which you can get hundreds, if not more, of miles per gallon of fuel with the same doggone vehicle and make that thing run more efficiently where you're not generating all the heat tearing that engine apart. It's crazy. It's just crazy that people don't understand that. My mind, I tell you, and I wish I could plug each and every one of you into my brain. Just plug you in and just let you see what I'm seeing. And you see what I'm seeing, it all make perfect sense to you. And then you also understand why it is that my YouTube channel, how come I've done it the way that I've done it. Because if you look out there at all the other prior researchers, they didn't fare so well because there's people out there that don't want them saying what we're saying. Proof positive is what they do to us when we're trying to do a radio show, trying to bring people together to give them the information. Stephen Gibbons posted an entire page. There's a link in the Super Chat room. You go up, scroll up at the top up there above the radio player, and in the deal, you'll see Stephen's resource page. You click on that. He's got link after link after link after link of alternative energy researchers on that page. He spent a lot of time doing that. Now, we should be able to get more people here to see that, to go out there and look at these different alternatives to what we got going on. So it ain't like we're at a lack for information. We got tons and tons of information. We're just trying to get people here to see it. That's it. Just trying to get people here to see it. And, you know, doing what I can. I'm making videos. I'm doing radio shows. I'm taking all my time doing research before, during the week. And then I bring that information to the table and I share it with everybody. So for those folks out there that say, oh, all I do is talk about it, I never get nothing done, you tell me why it is I can't get nothing done. Is it because I don't have the resources, I don't have access to the finances like the United Nations or all the other organizations out there? When the doggone corporations need the best of the best, they come and get you and I. That's what they do. They come and get you for your talents and your skills. And then you do the work and they get the credit. You get a little bit of pennies in your bucket and they get a lot of money in theirs. That's how the system works. When we the people start working together, we'll get results. And until we start working together, we're just going to keep on doing the mad science show because that's all we got. You know, throwing it out there, trying to hope that somebody will take it and run with it. Anyway, let's keep going with this.
The observations. Hydrogen is a credible option to help decarbonise the UK energy system, but its role depends on early government commitment and improved support to develop the UK's industrial capability. Hydrogen can make an important contribution to long-term decarbonisation if combined with greater energy efficiency, cheap low-carbon power generation, electrified transport, and new hybrid heat pump systems, which have been successfully trialled in the UK. hydrogen could replace natural gas in parts of the energy system where electrification is not feasible or is prohibitively expensive, for example, in providing heat on cold winter days, industrial heat processes, and backup power generation. But they also point out hydrogen is not a silver bullet solution. There's clearly a great many potential opportunities being pursued and developed with hydrogen, and again, far too many for a single program. So in today's video, we're just going to focus on the part of that Climate Change Committee report that talked about using hydrogen as part of a hybrid system to heat our homes. Heating homes, businesses and industry accounts for nearly half of all the energy use in the UK and a third of UK carbon emissions, so reductions in this sector will have a big influence on the UK's chances of hitting the 2050 target. The CCC reckoned the cheapest scenario for the UK's national heating in a low carbon world will be achieved by installing hydrogen boilers in conjunction with the electrification of heating, by which they mean a hybrid heating system. So what exactly is a hybrid heating system? Well, it's a system that combines a heat pump outside the house with some sort of boiler inside the house. There's two types of heat pump: air source heat pumps or ground source heat pumps. According to this very useful report at possibly one of the world's most geekly titled websites, boilerguide.co.uk, a ground source heat pump extracts heat from underground. Pipes are buried in your garden either horizontally in loops or vertically downwards. A fluid passes through these pipes which extracts heat from the ground and transfers it to a heat exchanger. This heat exchanger heats water via taps and central heating. An air source heat pump is a fan unit which is installed outside your home where it extracts heat from the air outside, even in temperatures as low as minus 15, and again this heat is used to heat water via taps and your central heating. The other half of the hybrid system is the kind of boiler that most of us are already used to. The boiler is at its most effective and cheapest to run in the cold winter months. A hybrid heating system will monitor the temperature outside and automatically choose the most energy efficient option. For example, when the temperature outside is 2 degrees Celsius or higher, the heat pump will heat your home and hot water using renewable energy, so your boiler doesn't need to run. When the temperature drops, the system will intelligently switch to your boiler so as to maintain efficiency and keep energy costs to a minimum. In fact, the boiler could just use natural gas like the boilers that most of us have got in our homes now. But of course, that wouldn't really contribute to our net carbon zero targets, would it? It could instead be an all-electric model. Electric combi boilers already exist, and if they get their power from renewable energy, either because you get your electricity from a green energy provider, or you've got solar panels on your roof, or perhaps even a combination of both, then an electric boiler is a very good low-carbon alternative to our traditional gas boilers. In fact, so far in this scenario, we haven't mentioned hydrogen at all. So where does that fit in? Well, as a result of those Climate Change Committee recommendations that we looked at earlier, back in 2018, the UK Government Department of Business, Energy and Industrial Strategy, or BEIS, headed by Claire Perry, commissioned Fraser Nash Consultants to produce a full report on the potential for domestic hydrogen boilers, as well as hobs, ovens and fires. While the Climate Change Committee does accept that production and use of hydrogen is generally less efficient than electrification, they also point out that hydrogen is more readily storable than electricity.
Oh, I gotta pause this because listening to these people talk about, you know, the Climate Change Committee. Somebody reach out there and get those people to talk to me personally. Somebody figure out a way to get those people to actually either come on this radio show or do a Skype deal with me, and I will explain to them in graphic detail why a lot of what they're saying is pure ridiculousness, but how to resolve this whole deal. They're talking about carbon as it's a bad thing. Carbon ain't a bad thing. This world is carbon-based, for Pete's sake. The whole climate change is a lie to begin with. It started off as global warming. Alright, they said the planet was heating up. But then when it got cold and you were shoveling 20 inches of snow off your driveway, then they had, oh, well, no, we can't call it global warming anymore. It's hard to say it's warming when it's so cold outside. Then it became climate change and climate disruption. So the scam, these folks out there in these places that they call climate change committees, they're a part of the doggone scam. They're making money hand over fist. They're doing all this. They're not getting any results. I'm sitting here telling you how to get these doggone results. I'm telling you how, if you don't want carbon emissions coming out of the exhaust pipe, and the way that they're explaining about hydrogen technology being, you know, not as efficient, which is the biggest hockahooey in the history of time, and you don't understand how the physics of water actually functions, then of course it's going to be inefficient. You're talking about electrolysis. Of course it's going to be inefficient. But that one video that I played earlier, the guy was explaining how he was using distilled water with no electrolyte added to it. No salt, no sodium, nothing like that added to it. It was just pure distilled water. And using his cell the way that it was designed to produce hydrogen that he then in turn used for the fuel to burn to heat up the salt inside the reactor and transfer that heat that way. And there are other methods out there. There are methods out there called the HCAT, where you're actually sending hydrogen into the catalyst of the catalytic converter, which turns around for some reason and generates a massive amount of heat from that release. Going back to Stan Myers and the way that he was producing hydrogen back in the day, the reason why he ain't around with us anymore, well, you know, he was doing it incredibly efficiently. And that he was running around in a dune buggy in 1979 running on water? The technology's there. It's been there all along. It's plain as the nose on your face. Everything out there is fuel. The way that the system is talking about this climate change and carbon footprint ridiculousness is just another way to slap you upside the head and tell you, oh, you do it our way. It's either our way, the highway kind of craziness. It just drives me nuts. It drives me bonkers, because if I could get these folks to listen to what I'm saying and they were true in their word about wanting to fix this problem that they claim that we have, that we don't have, but nonetheless, given the devil's due, if they're claiming we got the problem and they're ignoring the solutions to the problem, then they're either just in it for the money or the notoriety or the politics. They're not in it to win it. They're not in it to fix the problem, period. But somebody reach out to these folks and tell them about this crazy guy named Shaziz that is trying to give everybody the doggone answers for free. And with their resources, with their capabilities, if they took these ideas and tried them before they denied them, they would be successful in their endeavors. I can take a look at any system that you got on the table out there. Once I understand the mechanics of what they're saying these things actually do, I can explain it to you in graphic detail how to make that thing better. That's my mechanical gift. For some reason, that's my gift. And, you know, trying to share that with the world has been the biggest headache that I've ever had in my entire lifetime. Because they say you got a problem, you step forward, you use your gift, and you try to share it with everybody, and you get this kind of results. It's nuts. I've reached out through Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Shaziz Radio, and all the other networks that rebroadcast the shows. I've reached out through emails, I've called and contacted and tried to get people to listen to what it is I've had to say. I've talked to machine shops and places that had capabilities of manufacturing, and I offered to give them the designs. You just build it like I say it, give me one single prototype, and then the rest of it's yours. You can sell it on the market, and you can make millions of dollars, and I'm not even going to be sad about that. I will design it for you. You build it for me. You give me a prototype, and then you go on down the road and make as much money as you want. Because I'm sitting here trying to show the world something, and most of the time it's either seeing is believing. If somebody can't see it with their own two eyes, if they can't physically measure it, then they don't want to believe it's possible, and that's the problem. I talked about the plasma water heater. I talked about the plasma reactor. I talked about different ways of using electricity. I showed that you can take a DDS signal generator and take 5 volts and ramp it up to over 100 and some odd volts and charge up a system of massive capacitors. Not one single battery in the entire circuitry, and running multiple circuits that require at least 9 volts apiece in order to run. Not to mention the storage ones with their own readout, the digital readout on there. And so I just took 5 volts and I charged up that entire system. Now you take that idea and you run with it and you scale it up and you got more electricity and storage capability than you could ever use in a trillion lifetimes. I've given the world what I promised I was going to give to them. They just didn't listen. They didn't believe it. And so I continued to try. I continue to beat my head against the wall trying to say, what the heck is your problem? I showed you what to do. So when I get my new lab together, I'm going to continue the journey. I'm going to continue to try to do what it is that I'm trying. I'm trying to show you exactly what you said you needed. But they're not coming to the table, folks. The system don't care. The moment I get a prototype which I can put on the table to allow people to come in and measure it and they find out it really works, that's when this all stops. That's when the system has already won the game against you. They take my device, they make me look crazy, and they go on down the road, and then years down the line you're still paying an electric bill? No. This is why incrementally I've been showing you everything that I've been showing you. There's a reason for everything. There is a method behind my madness. There's a reason why I show you something that just because you look at it and you say, well, that ain't free energy and it's not going to run my house. And I didn't say it was going to run your house, but if you pay attention to what I just showed you, that concept of taking something as simple as a computer hard drive, spinning it up to 50,000 RPMs and running a whole strand of 120 volt LEDs, what's that tell you? You just generated a whole lot of light because you understood the physics of what was going on. Do you realize how little copper wire is actually in a computer hard drive and how much voltage you can actually get out of one of those things? Yeah, the Fisher & Paykel, Samsung washer and dryer motors, the direct drive motors, they don't even need transmissions in them anymore. It's all electric. This doggone thing uses a circuit that basically runs like an RC motor controller, and it can spin that thing up and it has the torque to turn your water and your dirty laundry around inside of it. That's a lot of power. So taking that knowledge, that mechanical knowledge, and you step back and look at the big picture, and this guy is calling everything a hybrid. Everything's a hybrid. You're using all the different combinations of all the different things that nature has provided, the physics, the fuel, everything. And you're using it to get a job done. You put those pieces of the puzzle in the right order, and you got one system that is so ridiculously efficient that even if you do have to buy fuel, you don't have to buy near as much. But even if you understand what that fuel is that you're actually purchasing, you have that fuel laying in your yard. You have that same exact fuel laying in your ponds. You mow your lawn, you have that same exact fuel. There is and has never, ever been anything such as fossil fuel. It's a lie. It's all carbon-based. If you understand the chemistry and the physics of how that stuff become crude oil to begin with, you can make the stuff in your lab. You take the old oil pumps out there in Texas where they finally drained them dry. They weren't filling up fast enough so they could get barrels of oil out of them. So they considered this thing to be dry. They closed it down. They moved on, looked for more oil. Years later, they stumbled back and tried to figure out what they're going to do with this piece of property because it's got this old oil well on it, and they went to check it out, and the doggone thing's full again. Where did the dinosaurs come from that filled it up a second time around? You see what I'm trying to say here? You know, wood gasifiers and all these different things out there, those those are clues to everything I've been pointing out. The heat, the pressure, the physics, the water involved in it. There is water in your fuel, whether you think there is or not. Oh, you can't run water in an engine. You'll ruin the engine. You hydrolock it. Blah, blah. You don't understand. You've been running water in your engines. They don't call it hydrocarbons for nothing. There's a reason these folks don't want you to know this information. Because the moment you figure it out, you figure out you can build your own refinery and you can turn your trash into fuel. It becomes just like the doggone Back to the Future guy when he comes back in on his time machine and he starts digging in the trash and he's putting banana peelings, beer, and everything down into Mr. Fusion. And, the guy's asking him what he's doing. He's fueling up. They showed you that everything was fuel in a movie. Called it science fiction so that you'd never believe that it could possibly be science fact. Let's keep going with this.
A very large scale, which is why the UK and other European governments are quite keen to use it to replace natural gas and potentially oil in parts of the energy system where full electrification is very difficult or disruptive or very expensive. So how do hydrogen boilers work then? Well, that's a very good question because they're not actually commercially available just yet. That's where the report from the Fraser Nash Consultancy comes in. They looked at three likely options for development. Number one was new appliances developed specifically to run on hydrogen. Number two was the adaptation of existing natural gas appliances in situ to run on hydrogen. And number three was new dual fuel appliances that can switch from natural gas to hydrogen. And they've actually identified some fairly significant technical challenges that will need quite a lot of research and development to overcome. In very, very brief summary of their very large report, they made these final conclusions. Hydrogen has a significantly higher flame speed, greater flammability range, and is likely to burn at a higher temperature than natural gas. These characteristics present significant engineering challenges that particularly affect the burners in appliances. Specifically, there are concerns with light back, which is propagation of flames back through burners, higher NOx emissions, and a potential explosion of unburned gas. Yeah, they need to sort that one out. The report also talks about flame failure devices, and these things...
Did you hear all that craziness? Literally, did you hear all that craziness? All the reasons why they don't want to use hydrogen technology? Well, when you got a when you got a nuclear reactor, you take highly refined radioactive rods, and because it's so energized, it's so energetic, it's so hot, they call it hot because it has all this energy that's trying to be released, it's depleting as it sets there. The moment you put all this stuff together, it's trying to put this, it's trying to release this energy because it's not natural that you cram all this radioactive material together. Well, as this is depleting, it's releasing this energy, which is turning around and bombarding the water molecules, which is heating those water molecules so rapidly it's producing heat that's boiling this water. And you only get a 2% efficient out of each one of those rods. What ends up happening is the water boils and boils and boils. It gets steam. It turns the turbines, which produces electricity, and you got your lights. The failure comes in when you have a runaway, when you don't have control rods in there to restrict that energy bombarding the water, something to absorb that energy, then the water could quite literally run away and superheat and flash to steam. That energy of the water moving so rapidly and broke down and broke down, you are primed for a hydrogen explosion. So, because there's so much pressure, because there's so much heat, and you keep on putting that heat to it, eventually it will literally separate the water molecule completely between the hydrogen and oxygen, and the next thing you got is an explosion and an implosion at the same exact time. Now, knowing that you can unintentionally create a hydrogen explosion, then that means if you're smart, you can actually back that down and do a controlled explosion. And because of the temperature and the way that hydrogen actually burns, it's as simple as instead of having the gas burner right up onto the bottom of your pan, that heat directly transferring it, you could take that burner and you could move it down, and the radiant heat from that flame, you could regulate the doggone temperature and you're not melting things. It's that simple. It's that ridiculously simple. And these folks will give you a million and one reasons why this technology is not available yet. If the flame, you take two different types of torches, you get an oxygen tank and a doggone propane. What is that doggone, I can't remember the name of that gas. But it's basically oxygen. And so those two have hotter flames. One you can use for like a cutting torch, and the other one you can use just to heat things up because of the difference of the gases in there. I can't remember. It comes in a yellow bottle, and the propane comes in a blue bottle. But either way, the two differences in those gases are the two different temperatures. If you got one that you can put directly on the metal and heat it up but not cut through it, and you got the other one that you can't put directly on the metal because you'll heat it up but it'll get so hot that it'll literally cut through it, all you got to do is back it away. Pull that flame away from it. And the physics kicks in, and you're only putting the heat to it that you want to go to. So for every problem that they could put out there, I'll give you 10, 15, 20, or 100,000 freaking solutions for it.
Just detect the presence of a flame and automatically switch the gas off if the flame goes out. Natural gas boilers use ionization sensors to detect combustion gases from the flames. But ionization sensors don't work with a hydrogen flame, so you need something else. Industrial processes use ultraviolet and infrared sensors. They're a good option, but they'll have to be redeveloped to reduce their size and cost. Other components like pipelines, gas valves and heat exchangers will need a certain amount of redevelopment to cope with the different combustion characteristics.
Alright, pause this again. When it comes down to hydrogen and a sensor that's going to detect hydrogen, we already have pressure sensors. If you know exactly how much pressure you need to produce a flame that will run your system, then anything that comes above that, then that means that something's gone wrong, that it's not burning. So hydrogen will pressurize. If you got a hydrogen cell and you don't have no place for that gas to go, that hydrogen expands just like the water molecule whenever you boil it into steam. And so the hydrogen pressure can cause this thing to literally overpressurize and pop like a balloon. So once you understand that, and you got a burner system, and you got it sealed so that you're burning the hydrogen and the oxygen to keep your flame going, if that system becomes overpressurized, you already know the pressure that it takes to run the flame the way you want it. If it becomes overpressurized, it'll quite literally pop that pressure valve and vent that out into the atmosphere. Hydrogen is light. It will just fly right up in the sky and just disappear. It's gone. So, there are solutions to everything. There are solutions to every single problem that they're trying to say exists out there. Somebody reach out there to those folks and they are on these committees and try to get them to talk with me. And I'd appreciate that. If I could ever just get a chance to sit down with these folks and have them actually pay attention to what it is that I'm trying to say, we have every solution necessary to resolve all these problems that they keep complaining about.
...of hydrogen. But essentially, the fundamental operating principles won't fundamentally change. Perhaps their most important piece of advice, though, is this. Development of 100% hydrogen domestic appliances will require government intervention. Initially, this requires target funding to close the innovation gap and develop the first generation of appliances. In other words, some central government finance paid for out of our taxes will have to be diverted from other funding programs into the research and development and quite possibly subsidisation of these new technologies. The Climate Change Committee themselves even went as far as saying this: depending on the development of hydrogen-ready appliances and the cost premium over natural gas boilers, the government should consider mandating hydrogen-ready heating appliances by the mid-2020s, similar to the successful mandation of condensing boilers 20 years earlier. And that's a concept that might be more readily acceptable over here in Europe than it would be in some other societies around the world, not least in the United States. And then there's still the issue of how the hydrogen is produced in the first place. As this CCC infographic shows, it won't just be via water electrolysis. The intention is still to use steam reforming as well, but with the important addition of carbon capture and storage. Now that's a whole separate technology and debate.
Oh my god. Ah! Look. Carbon dioxide and carbon monoxide are fuel. Flat out. You can burn carbon dioxide and you can burn carbon monoxide for fuel. So if this is your exhaust and it can be used as fuel, why wouldn't you start off using it as fuel so that you lessen your exhaust on the other side? Think about it. Oh, it drives me bonkers listening to some of these people.
That we've looked at a couple of times in previous programs, so I won't dwell on it here. Suffice to say that for various reasons, the jury is very much still out on whether carbon capture and storage is a viable option within the carbon reduction project. No doubt many of you will have a view on this subject, and there have been some great debates in the discussion threads on the previous videos, so please do feel free to dive in and leave your thoughts in the comments section below. We could go into loads more really technical detail on this one, but in the interest of brevity and sanity, I'll leave it there for this week. I have though left links to all the articles and technical papers that I used to research this programme, so if you want to delve into the subject a bit more, then scroll down past the description in the comments section and they'll all be there for you to click on. Please do give us a like and a share if you found the programme useful and informative, and most important of all, if you haven't already done so, please do subscribe to the channel to support the work that we do. 6,000 people in a week can't be wrong after all. And if you hit the little notification bell when you subscribe, then you'll be kept up to date whenever a new episode comes out. It is of course completely free to do that, and all you need to do is click on that link there. As always, thank you very much for watching, have a great week, and remember to just have a think.
Yep. See you. This guy's got over 50,000 subscribers and actually had said no solutions to the problems. None. Told him what all the problems were. Absolutely no solutions. 50,000 subscribers. Could you imagine what I could do for 50,000 subscribers on mine? If I'm sitting there telling them actual results, showing them actual results, showing them actual solutions. I don't even know how many of those so-called subscribers even on mine are real. They might even be bots. They might be like basically using that to suppress me, because there's got to be a reason why I've been trying to tell everybody all this stuff and I can't even get people into the chat rooms over there at the Super Chat. 8,000 some odd subscribers, and there's 7 people in Shaziz Mad Science chat. You tell me what's going on there. You know, and you look over the People for People radio chat over there right now, and I get it. Some people are asleep this time of day. There's 6 people over there. What's happening? These folks said that they needed, that's why I got all these podcasts out there. So regardless of whether or not they're listening in live at the same time, there's still the information's available to them. They can take these podcasts and run with them. They can steal all the ideas. It don't matter. Most of the ideas aren't new anyway. They're old technology that we repointed out. But where are these people? These climate change committees, where are they at? They ain't here. If they were here, if they really cared about getting results, we'd already be done with it. They got access to they got the voice, they got the platform, they got the finances. They want to really resolve things. Let's build it. You know? That's what I've been saying all along. Let's try this right here.
You may have learned about the three states of matter, solid, liquid, and a gas, in a previous lesson. Did you know that there is a fourth state of matter, plasma? In this lesson, we will learn about plasma. Let's start by thinking about ice. When ice is sufficiently heated, it melts to form water. It has therefore undergone a change of state, from a solid to a liquid. Recall that in a solid, all of the particles are closely packed in a fixed position, and therefore has a fixed shape and volume. The particles in a liquid are still touching one another and are able to move around each other. Therefore, a liquid still has a fixed volume, but it takes the shape of their container. What is the change of state that occurs when water is heated to 100 degrees Celsius? Pause, think, and continue when ready. The answer is, water evaporates from a liquid to a gas. In our case, water vapor. The particles in a gas are further away from one another and take the shape and volume of their container. For certain substances, if we continue to apply heat to their gaseous form, another change of state could occur. These substances can go from a gas to a state of matter called plasma. For this change of state to occur, very strong heat must be applied. When heat is sufficiently strong, the electrons are stripped from their respective atoms, creating free electrons and positive ions. Although there are both negative and positive particles, plasma is neutral overall, as there are equal amounts of oppositely charged particles. Since free electrons are present, substances in plasma form can conduct electricity. This is what separates a gas from plasma. All gases cannot conduct electricity, but plasma can. Naturally occurring plasma include lightning and the northern lights. If we were to go far beyond planet Earth, stars also exist in plasma form. In fact, stars are really just hot balls of plasma. Plasma can be found in fluorescent light bulbs and neon signs. When an electrical current is passed through the mercury vapor in fluorescent light bulbs, it heats up the gases sufficiently to strip the electrons and to create plasma. Plasma screen TVs are made possible due to this state of matter. A plasma screen is made of many thousands of tiny dots called pixels, which are made of three fluorescent light electrodes emitting the colors red, green, and blue. The combination of these colors can give any possible color, which is why we can see all colors on these screens. The higher the number of pixels, the higher the definition, and the images will appear sharper and more detailed.
So there's one explanation of plasma. Now I'm going to scroll down and find the other one that I want to share with you, if I can get there. Let me see here. Alright, I'm having an issue trying to get this doggone thing to scroll down. That's that one, this one right here.
Yes, plasma is the first state of matter in the universe. Wait, what? Is it true? Most people only know about the other three states of matter, solids, liquids, and gases, but they often forget about the existence of the fourth one. So, what is plasma, you ask? Okay, let's take a trip down memory lane when your physics teacher talked about this state of matter. You probably fell asleep during that class, didn't you? Okay, Everyone knows that the atmosphere is gas, the ocean is liquid, and the ground we're standing on is solid. These are the three states of matter that exist, and the difference among these forms is the level of energy existing in them. Oh, but that's not all. Plasma is the fourth state of matter on Earth. How come? Well, in a nutshell, you have an ice cube, which is a solid. If we heat it up, the ice cube will melt and dissolve into a liquid. Continue to heat it up, and the liquid will slowly evaporate, transforming into a gas. So, what if we continue to provide heat into this gas? Well, the temperature reaches several thousand degrees, and this gas will be ionized. The vast majority of the molecules or atoms left will only have a nucleus, since the electrons have separated and moved independently. This ionized gas is a mixture of electrons, neutral molecules, and positively and negatively charged ions, which move chaotically. And there you have plasma. Plasma is the first state of matter in the universe, because 99.9% of all visible matter in the universe exists in the state of plasma. The sun is a giant plasma. Stars are also luminous spheres of plasma. The lightning that strikes during a thunderstorm or the magical phenomenon of the aurora borealis are also plasma. Only on Earth or some dark planets in the galaxy can you find substances that exist in three states of solid, liquid, and gas, which accounts for only 0.1%. Therefore, plasma is the most powerful substance in the universe. Plasma's application in our daily life is very diverse, such as plasma lights, plasma screens, or plasma cutters used in mechanical factories. Especially a $14 billion NETR arc reactor in France that can produce plasma with up to 150 million degrees Celsius. Speaking of arc reactors, we have to mention Tony Stark's, aka Iron Man's, mini-type arc reactor on his chest. This small reactor, which is only a few pounds, can produce a huge source of energy. This energy converts directly into electricity, helping Iron Man fly up in the air or blast power to save the world. Well, if you believe in that kind of superhero stuff. George Lucas, the creator of Star Wars, didn't really fool you with his science fiction. Remember the colorful lightsaber? Yes, it's plasma. Due to the control of the magnetic field located in the hilt, the arc light has a fixed shape. Is it possible that Goku's Kamehameha also produces plasma? Maybe the way Goku awakens his inner power by heating up the air around his palms with extreme heat is the same mechanism which produces plasma. Well, now you know what plasma is. Yes, it's the fourth physical state on Earth, but it's the first state, the Big Boss State.
Thanks for watching. Donate to us through Patreon, so we can make more videos for you. Don't forget to share your thoughts on the video in the comment below, and suggest the topic you want the monsters to discover next. Our monsters will see you next week.
Alright, so there's another exciting, explanation of plasma technology. So, where do we go to from here? You got all the solutions? Trying to build the dream team, trying to get those folks that have the capabilities of manufacturing and resources to combine their resources and solve these so-called problems that they got. So the future of heat, the way society, you're going to see. If you go out there and try to look up plasma heaters, there are some plasma heaters in existence. And you don't hear much about them. It's really hard to find information on there. You have plasma cutters, you have plasma TVs, plasma lighting, and so on down the line. And science says light is heat, and heat is light, vice versa. So what's that tell you? It don't take nothing to produce plasma. High voltages at small input currents. And you can generate plasma. You can manipulate that magnetic field, and you can manipulate light. It's mind blowing. It's mind blowing, and it's ridiculously simple. So The future of heat's going to be in plasma technology. And if you get that down to where, you know, a 12-volt power supply could run a heating system for your entire house, that's efficiency. Everything that I've done in my lab, I've built around anything from 12 volts down, because it's easy for anybody to come up with a car battery. If you can come up with that car battery and you understand how to move energy around, you can use that car battery as a backup to a storage bank, which would be a huge capacitor bank that you would store a lot of voltage pressure in. And that voltage pressure, if you understand how to use it, can also bring back the current, the watts, and the amps that you need to run the inefficient junk. But it also does it in a different fashion, to where now, while it's running that inefficient junk, it's not pushing too much power to that given device, so that device is going to last multitudes times longer than it ever would have before. So I want to play a part of this one right here.
My name is Ambrogio Fasoli, and I would like to introduce to you our new course on plasma physics and applications. I'm a professor of physics at the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology, and I have the privilege of directing the Center for Research in Plasma Physics, from where all instructors and assistants for this course come. This course will provide you with the basic knowledge of plasmas and lead you through the application to fusion energy, space, and astrophysics. Most of the universe we know about is made of plasma, a state in which nuclei and electrons are set free, and in which electromagnetic forces are dominant. We are surrounded by plasma, starting from the ionosphere 100 kilometers above us, which is connected to the Sun via the plasma of the solar wind. The very tenuous interstellar space is a plasma, and so are the largest objects that emit X-rays. Our life is energized by plasmas. All stars, in fact, including our Sun, are made of plasma and operate on the principle of nuclear fusion. Without plasmas and fusion, the universe as we know it today would not exist. On Earth, natural plasmas are much less frequent, but still present. For example, they appear in lightning and auroras. In addition, many plasmas are man-made. Most technology objects in a room are produced using plasmas. The market of plasma-aided manufacturing is gigantic, of the order of $100 billion per year. And plasmas are at the core of fusion, a possible solution of one of the most formidable challenges faced by mankind today, that of finding a source of energy that will be safe, abundant, available to all, and compatible with sustainable development. Different parts of the course will be discussed by different specialists, who will combine formal aspects of plasma physics with cutting-edge illustrations of research topics. In the first part, we will introduce the plasma state and the models to describe it, from single particles to fluid. In the second part, we will illustrate examples of plasma in space and astrophysics, and discuss plasma applications in industry and medicine. The third part will be dedicated to fusion energy. We will go from the design of a fusion reactor to plasma confinement configuration for fusion, and finally, to confining, heating, and extracting energy from a burning plasma. This course is aimed at the level of bachelor third year in science, in particular physics, but also in engineering, with only basic prerequisites, such as general physics, in particular electricity and magnetism, and calculus. So my colleagues and I really look forward to seeing many of you in this course, and discuss together plasmas and their applications.
Alright, so you talk about plasma technology. There's a little bit of an example of plasma. However, going back to the temperature, the core of plasma ranges in temperature from 11,000 to 14,500 degrees Fahrenheit. And they're, once again, they say, thus limiting applicable uses, because things like steel will literally melt in less temperatures than that. So imagine if you had a plasma reactor that could literally take a chunk of steel and melt it into a liquid and keep on melting it into a vapor, a gas, and then keep on energizing it into the fourth state of matter. Imagine the amount of energy that would be available in that type of heat. So, with that said, there are many ways to store heat. There are many ways to store pressure, air pressure, electrical pressure, and so on down the line. And once you understand that simple science, the simple physics of all that right there, You got every single need answer necessary to resolve. These doggone computers, we're pushing too much power to them. They get hot. You got to have fans blowing across there. You got to keep the dust off of them so that they can keep a constant cooling surface going so they don't get too hot and reach the thermal breakdown. Everything has a thermal breakdown. So by saying that you could take plasma and you could melt it into a liquid and keep on melting it until it turned into a gas, and then keep on melting it until it turned into a plasma, it doesn't defy any of the known laws of physics. It's all there. We got plasma cutters that will cut through steel. We got plasma TVs and plasma lighting. And every bit of what I've been talking about today, you know, every time you use energy, you generate heat. We know that we can extract, we can change heat energy into electricity. We know that. There's things like the Peltier element, there's thermocouples, thermopiles. So, if you can do it on that scale right there, then you can scale it down. You can scale it up or you can scale it down. Little tiny microplasmas. Little tiny, like a sun inside of a little tiny container. And that little tiny container is literally heating up a surface that is not hot enough to kind of to melt it, but just hot enough to have a temperature difference from the outside. And you got a little miniaturized reactor that you can extract electricity from. If it can be scaled up, it can be scaled down. The future of heating using plasma technology, once you understand the concept of it. They say the sun is plasma. The sun radiates that heat out. And so we absorb that heat. So there's no difference than you building a plasma reactor, and instead of putting your materials in the center of the core of that plasma that's hot, you put it on the outside in a range to where it can transfer that heat without causing the temperature to get to the extreme and melt it. Inside of a vacuum is the reason why a tungsten element doesn't burn up when you're putting all that current to it. So when you put all that current to it, if it wasn't inside of a vacuum, the temperature would get so high that it would melt the element in half and your light goes out. But because we figured out we can stick it inside of a vacuum, and we can get it extremely hot, and we can cause it to produce light, visible light, and we got a light bulb. Well, imagine if inside that same exact light bulb you had a tube of coiled up copper or any stainless steel or whatever sealed inside there around that element. You would still get the light, but you could also transfer the waste heat from that light to that, and whatever liquid you circulate through that tube would get hot. We could build a combination system of a lighting system that was also a heating system, that you had plenty of light through your house, and as this light is going, whether it be a resistive element such as tungsten or nichrome, or even a plasma itself, that your lighting is your heating, and it's also an electrical source as well. So, where there's a will, there's a way. It's, like I said, and I've said it a million times, I'll say it again. It's not that we don't have enough energy. It's that we're using what we do have inefficiently. You can get just as much work done with less input. That's what I've been trying to tell everybody. It takes more energy in than you can get out. So what? If that's the case, if you're using that energy more efficiently, you can get the same amount of work done. The mathematicians will sit around and they will do all kinds of things and convince themselves that it's not possible. It's just not possible. But you look and listen to everything that they're saying about how, every time you use energy, you're producing a byproduct such as heat. What is that heat? It's energy. And the only reason why it don't seem to be efficient with you is because you're not recapturing, you're not monopolizing on that heat energy. So once you monopolize on that heat energy and you guide it to where you want it to go, now you have a heating source and a light source. And depending on whether you're using plasma or whatever, you have also a radiant energy source as far as electricity goes as well. Thermoelectrics, so on. We can build, instead of nuclear reactors, we can build electrical reactors that will basically energize any of the noble gases into the fourth state of matter, and we know what the temperature is at the core, and so we know that that heat could be transferred, just like the sun transferring its heat energy radiantly through the atmosphere. We can do the same thing. That sun produces so much energy that as it's all that energy, all those waves coming from space is literally energizing the atmosphere and producing the northern lights, which is plasma. So, we got the answers. Reach out, see if you can get some of these doggone climate change committees to sit down and humor me long enough to have a conversation. Tell them to put their thinking caps on and put a couple hours aside, or take one of these podcasts and let them listen in. Because, if there really is a problem, and there really is a solution, and nobody's coming to the table, that means it's nothing more than political. That means it's a scam. They just want your money. It's that simple. Folks, you've been listening to Mad Science. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, please share the podcast. That's the key. Download it. Share it with somebody. However, if you got time and you want to go out and write down, make a poster and stick it out there on a billboard somewhere to get people to come here and tell them it's safe, anything we can do to get people to the table is going to be the way that this all works out. I'm ready to give everybody every single bit of information that I got on every single research project that I've got. But I need to do it in a way that I'm going to ensure that everybody gets to use it. Everybody gets access to it. There is free energy, regardless of what anybody wants to tell you. Peace and love, everybody. Take care. Stay tuned for the Music with Kara Hour.
What is the dream? The dream is to bring brilliant minds from every nation together to solve the world's problems, one positive pebble at a time. It will be we, the people of the world, that bring about true change, peace, and love to all. Governments never solve any problem, only create them. Wars, starvation, sickness, oppression, financial slavery, death and destruction is what governments do best. When all the military might of nations is used to destroy other nations, the question has to be asked, why not use that military strength for good? Feed the hungry, shelter the homeless, heal the sick, and so forth. True representation of truth, freedom, and justice comes from we the people, and it never came from slick-talking politicians that say whatever they have to get elected, and then regulate away your freedoms. There is no reason to have starving babies in the world of today. Yet, it goes on. There's no reason for wars and sickness, yet it continues. We as the people must stop feeding that beast that is eating humanity alive. We the people of all nations have the power to bring about a literal heaven on earth. You as an individual have more power than you can possibly imagine. You have the power of the spoken word. You have the power of the pen. The power of action, and most of all, the power of love. It is time to use this power to make our world a better place. We are the founding fathers, mothers, sisters, and brothers of our children, and of our children's children's future. Into the future and beyond, what we do today will define the world that they live in tomorrow. Let us from every nation come together and make that future a great one.
It was that ant that stood up to me.
Yeah, but we can forget about him.
Yeah, it was just one ant.
Ooh.
One ant.
Yeah, you're right. It's just one ant.
Yeah, boss. They're puny.
Puny? Say, let's pretend this brain is a puny little ant.
Didn't that hurt?
Nope.
Well, how about this one?
Are you kidding?
Well, how about this?
You let one ant stand up to us, then they all might stand up. Those puny little ants outnumber us 100-1. And if they ever figure that out, there goes our way of life. It's not about food. It's about keeping those ants in line. That's why we're going back.
Does anybody else want to stay?
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission: to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
Crap.
Operator, give me the number for 911.
I got a laptop. I make music with my friends. I've got a laptop, baby. I make music with my friends. There it is.
God's name is going on in here. What was that ruckus?
What ruckus?
I was just in my office and I heard a ruckus.
Could you describe the ruckus, sir?
Watch your tongue, young man. Watch.